Like to convene the finance committee. We do have a quorum present, and we have the minutes from April the 9th. And Representative Seifert, you've been here and you've been busy, I know. Would you care to move the minutes?
Sure, I'll move the minutes.
The motion is before us. Any discussion on the approval of the minutes? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed. Motion carried. I don't know if we're being televised, members. Can't tell if the cameras are moving or not, but yes, they are. So, the cell phones, in fact, I'm going to leave, because they usually remind us that we have to, and mentioning that, so I'm going to turn mine off, because we do get some feedback, is what we're told. So, members, being that we're televised, you keep that in mind and turn off the cell phones. We'll have that all set. And is Representative Rukavina here? You've got the first two bills. Are you ready?
Yes. I'm going to grab them out of here. Can I do it from here, Mr. Chair? Do you want me to just...
I think maybe up front. You'll have the clean audience there. I want to get a good picture of you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for taking me first as I have a committee up. So, Mr. Chair, I'll take up 3722 and I move that House Bill 3722, Second Committee on Growth, to be recommended to pass and placed on the General Register.
Okay, the motion is before us. Representative Rukavina.
Okay, and Mr. Chair, then I have a delete all amendment number DE7.
Okay, and would you like to move the amendment to get it in the order that you'd like to present the bill?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I'll move the amendment, and members, the original 3722, of course, was the my committee report to this finance committee, and now I'm just doing a delete all so I can have something on the General Register in case we need it. This military reservist loan program is one of the governor's proposals, as is the economic injury program. They're both $500,000 appropriation that my roommate gave me money for, which I had given him $10 million, and he gave me a million back. So that's basically what I'm doing.
And that's reflected in the amendment. So any discussion on the amendment to put the bill in the order that the author would like? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carried. Representative Rukavina, any additional comments?
No, Mr. Chair, that's the bill then.
Any questions from committee members? Seeing none, then Representative Rukavina renews his motion that House File 3722, the Second Committee Engrossment, as amended, be recommended to pass and be placed on the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed. Motion carried. Representative Rukavina, you have the next bill as well.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'll move House File 3349 and that it be recommended to pass and placed on the General Register.
Okay, the motion is before us. Representative Rukavina.
And Mr. Chair, I have a little amendment that I would like to add on to the main bill, the A1 amendment, 3349A1. It was a little bill that I had wanted to do. I always thought it would be beneficial to the state to have the president of the university give a state of the state on education, and being that they are independent, he is independent from the governor's office, and just to get an unbiased view of what's going on in education in the state of Minnesota. I forgot to put it in my original bill, so I'd like to amend it on to 3349, and 3349 basically deals with a small sunset that was to or an expiration on the state grant programs for surplus appropriations and how they're pumped back into the grant program. So I'd appreciate your support on the amendment.
Okay, Representative Rukavina moves Amendment H3349A1. Any discussion on the amendment?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I have a question.
Representative Pawlowski.
Representative Rukavina, on the first line, is requested. So if he doesn't do it, what happens? Or she, it could be a she.
Death by hanging would be my preference, but I think that's illegal. You know, you can't supposedly mandate the legislature to the university, but I think that the president of the University of Minnesota, regardless of who is the president, would be more than happy to address the Minnesota legislature early in the odd-numbered years, as the governor does with a budget proposal and his state of the state, just to tell and inform the legislature what's going on.
So, Mr. Chair?
Representative Pawlowski.
Sure. Mr. Rukavina, you then heard this bill in your committee, and it was vetted, and the university testified, and the other educational entities, so they're all ready to participate with this, or is this the first time anyone on the planet seen it?
Mr. Chair, this is
Rukavina.
I told you, I forgot to do it, so this is the first time anybody.
Oh, like when you say forgot, I don't quite. Mr. Chair, Representative Rukavina, I don't understand what that means sometimes when you say forgot.
It was part of the Representative Pawlowski. I didn't have it in the pocket. That's the problem.
Mr. Chair, Representative Rukavina, don't pull the Jim Rice on me. Mr. Chair, I'm not sure what to say about this one. We're now inserting a request to the president of the University of Minnesota on a formal address. We're at the end of session. This is extremely curious. To paraphrase Jim Rice once again, who read extensively from Lewis Carroll, very curious.
Any further discussion?
Mr. Chairman,
I represent Hilti.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Rukavina, this may be a good idea. I'm wondering why you are just focused on the University of Minnesota and not including the Chancellor of Minsky.
Representative Rukavina.
Again, Mr. Chair, it was the independent nature of the university that, whereas the, you know, the Minsky Chancellor is governed by a board of trustees that is appointed by the governor. It didn't have the same independence, I guess, as the president of the university does.
Thank you.
Representative Murphy, do you have your hand up? Representative Murphy, okay. Any further discussion?
Mr. Chair, I'm just trying to figure out why we're putting this in statute to request the president of U of M to come to the legislature. I don't get it. I mean, can we just have the Speaker of the House invite him in if there's interest in having a joint session, apparently?
Representative Rukavina.
Well, again, Mr. Chair, Representative Seifert, I thought that this would be a good idea, that given the independence of the university, that it would be good to get unbiased in the sense that not connected to the executive branch of government, probably still is, everybody's views are biased, but this would be an independent, whether it's controlled by Republicans, Democrats, or the third party, it would be an unbiased, independent view from those parties, from someone who's extremely involved in educating our people here in the state.
Mr. Chair, I'm just struggling with why we would put this. The statute's already cluttered with a lot of things, and I'm just trying to figure out why we would put this in permanent statute to have the president of U of M come in and talk to the legislature. Apparently, and it looks the way it reads here, I'm assuming he or she would also be able to submit this in writing if they wanted to. but it just is, I don't know, I just find it odd because it's a request because we can't tell the U of M what to do. I mean, I suppose we could also have an amendment to request they freeze tuition, because that's a request that people are more interested in than I think we've always kind of rejected these types of things in the statutes because they're so cluttered with stuff already. And then what if they don't want to do it? They'll just not do it, and then what happens?
Mr. Chair, you know,
that's a real convenience.
I thought it was a good idea. You know, Representative Seifert, you haven't been winning very much around here recently, so I'll give you one. To hell with it. I pull the amendment. I'll just go back to the original.
Okay. No,
how's that for us?
So Representative Rukavina now has the original bill before us. Any discussion on the bill? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Rukavina, you're getting rid of the expiration date on this for what purpose?
Well, Mr. Chair, we want the program to continue instead of expiring. What happened, what this surplus appropriation subdivision does is if there's any money left over in the grant program, then the Office of Higher Education is able to give a little increase, kick up in living and miscellaneous expense allowance, and the program to see it's been working fine. And so when it initially this was put in the statute, they wanted to see if it would work out okay, and that's why that expiration date was put in there. But now it's fine, so, you know, there's no need to add. The program should continue instead of expiring.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, Representative Rukavina, what happens if it isn't working next year?
Well, there's no problem, because if there's no money, no extra money in the state grant program, they're not going to kick up the miscellaneous and living expenses. But they used to have to come back and ask us permission to do that, and this just gave them the ability to do that if there was a surplus in the fund. So it's allowing them to do it without having to come back and, you know, have legislative approval, because there's extra money in the fund. The state grant program, it hasn't been used. Give them a little more bump because tuitions and everything else have been increasing. And it's a good program, and so just, you know, that's what this is doing.
So, Mr. Chair,
Representative
Rukavina, the reason for the expiration date in your mind was for...
I wasn't around then. Maybe somebody else was on the higher ed committee. Maybe Representative Pawlowski was on it then. I don't know why they put it. I think they wanted to see if it worked out okay, if it was, I don't know, if there was an abuse by the, I don't know why it was put on there, but it's not necessary anymore, because when there has been a surplus in the fund, they have passed it on to the students appropriately, and so therefore we're just taking off that expiration date. That would, if this date doesn't go, if we don't remove this, they will not be able to do that without coming to us, waiting till the next year when we go back in the session to allow that increase to be passed on to the students. That's what it's doing.
Thank you. Any further discussion then on the bill? Seeing none, then all those in favor of House File Number 3349 being recommended to pass and placed on the General Register, if I recall. Yeah, on the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion carried. Representative Solberg, I think you noted something in the previous one. Do you have a motion?
Yes. I think we need to reconsider that. I would move that we reconsider House File 3722.
Okay, the motion to reconsider is before us. You might want to explain what...
As you look through that, there's an appropriation in that. And so the motion was to go to the House floor, and it needs to come to the Ways and Means first.
So all those in favor of the motion to reconsider signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carried. We now, Representative Solberg would need a motion to recommend it to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
I would do so.
Okay, the motion is before us, and that would be as amended. be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Any discussion? Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Solberg, with a bill coming forward like this, at this time, with the appropriation in it, are we, is this going against our guidelines for meeting budget as far as balancing the budget? I mean, you're going on to the Ways and Means, I understand that, but you're picking up a bill right now that's going to be...
Mr. Chair, the appropriation has already been made and carried in the other bill. We will add another sentence in Ways and Means so we don't do the double counting.
Mm. In fact, the other bill, Representative Solberg, I'm told we only need to do it once, and it's already that language is in 1812. Okay, any further discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed. Motion carried. The next bill, I'm told Representative Mahoney, he present, no, there you are. Representative Mahoney, I'm told that you have a conflict coming up, so we'll move you to the next bill. And Representative Rukavina, we need you to make the division motion.
I'll move that
the division report for 3034.
I'll move the House House Higher Education Workforce Development
Division Report. Okay, that motion is before us. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carried. Representative Mahoney is here to move the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. I'd like to move House File 3034 as the first committee engrossment be recommended to pass and place and move to Ways and Means.
Is there an appropriation?
There is a, I have a preliminary fiscal note at this particular time that says it has a $5,000 impact.
Then it should go to Ways and Means. Only because the my notes said general register, but if there's a fiscal impact,
right,
then we have to
right.
Go to Ways and Means.
This came up.
So that motion is before us. If you'd care to explain the bill, Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair and committee members, this is primarily a cleanup bill and grammatical and technical clarifications from House File 1208 of last year. There, are, I can go through the bill relatively quickly and do the highlights. And I will do that. The first section clarifies that the code, any code amendments take 180 days to come into effect after they're placed into rule. I will go drop down to section 3 where it clarifies that the code enforcement, the fire code enforcement remains at the public safety. It does some clarification of journeyman electricians. And their credit for class time versus apprenticeship and working in the field before they can take their license. And the plumbing board in section 19, it clarifies that the public member does not need to have a plumbing license. Section 21 is clarifying bond requirements for restricted plumbers. Section 22 deals with clarifying the requirement for hooking up sewers and waters on manufactured housing. Section 30, I'm going to go to 39, which is a clarification and a clarification of insurance for builders, saying that they have to have $100,000 and a $300,000 aggregate limit and a $25,000 single limit for bodily injury or a combined of $300,000 per occurrence. It does bring into line hearing and administrative orders with everyone else for the new boards that were created last year. It is part on the contractor's recovery fund when a homeowner has a claim against a contractor, and this is kind of the last resort. they have to, it clarifies what kind of contract they have to have and who can make the claim against them. And it does have some key changes in it as it pertains to manufactured housing, steel fees, if you can build one and if you can set one. And then it has a licensing fee where it changes from a one-year and $100 fee to a three-year license and a $300 fee. So, by and large, it's a lot of better grammar in this particular bill, Mr. Chair and committee members.
Okay, and Representative Mahoney, we have an amendment here that your name is on, so
that is
would you like
correct.
To move the amendment now?
A08-1621. That is correct, sir, and I'd like to move that amendment.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion on the amendment? Or you should explain the amendment, and then we'll take discussion.
Last year in this bill, Representative Nelson, we put Representative Nelson's independent contractors language into this particular bill. And how should I say this? Drafting error, not seeing the total consequences of it, we exempted section 326B, number, I can't remember the exact, it's in here, it's on page one. I'm not sure that's the exact spot for it. Anyhow, we exempted that, and it, for all intents and purposes, gutted the independent contractor license language. This amendment fixes that problem and exempts, well, I better just read it. The building construction improvement services do not include the manufacture, supply, or sale of products, materials, and merchandise, landscape services for the maintenance or removal of existing trees, shrubs, and trees and other vegetation, whether or not the services are provided as part of a contract for building construction or improvement services, all of the landscaping services, unless the other landscaping services are provided as part of a contract for the building construction or improvement services. And that took about 2.5 weeks to negotiate and multiple meetings and conversations. What that does is it carves out landscapers and commercial contractors. So it's a relatively complicated fix to a drafting oversight.
And that motion is before us. So any discussion on the amendment, Representative Anderson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Representative Mahoney, your testifier. It looks like you're taking rules that have been rules and you're putting them now into statute. And I'm wondering why we want to do that.
Do you have a page for that?
What's that?
Do you have a page number on that?
No, I'm looking at the amendments that we got before us. And I'm just saying, it looks like these are rules that are presently being adhered to by the building construction trades, and now you're going to take that rule and make it a law.
Representative Anderson and Mr. Chairman, I'm John Rafalski, the legislative director for the department. But Representative Anderson, I think you're referring to is when the legislature passed the independent contractor, the new language last year for commercial and residential construction workers, our department did begin a year-long rulemaking process, and we just are at the final stages of that. And so we are not, in the rule that was published just last week, or 2 weeks ago, which is what brought this amendment to our attention, the rule was going to exempt all landscapers from the independent contractor law, the new law that will be going into effect at the end of the year. And what we're doing is specifying here in this amendment, certain landscapers are going to be exempt from the independent contractor law, but when you're part of a commercial building and improvement project, you would be subject to the independent contractor law. And Representative Anderson, the rule then will reflect the statute. So
Mr. Chair,
Representative Anderson,
I have a concern with when you mentioned here building construction and improvement services, and you're going to exempt these people
especially if you're talking where the manufacturer, supply or sale of products, materials or merchandise that's going to be used in the construction of a commercial or residential place, these things, what happens if you get in a situation where in a residential building, you've got products that come in that are not properly dried or gone through the process in which they, when they get put in. I've got people in residential areas back home that now have mold because of the products that were installed by the contractor are molding on the inside. Now you're going to exempt the my understanding looks like the materials in the sale of these products, you're going to exempt them from being under scrutiny for that. Am I misreading that?
President Rakowski.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Anderson, all we're excluding them is from independent contractor status.
Oh, I see. Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, President Mahoney, remember that big food fight we had over that last deal you had like this where what we considered handy and then you were putting through the hoops in the different. Is there any more of that type of stuff in this bill? Making it harder for a handy man to get a do his job or making him or her more licensed or certified? Webster and I were giving our agenda.
No, and there's another bill coming that will, we did have we're trying to expand the license window, but that's in another bill coming separately. But no, there's none of that in this particular bill.
President Webster.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney, I heard some of your beginning statements and then some of your ending statements and then got working on something else in between, but is there anything, does this have anything to do with the plumber's license exemption extension that you and I talked about earlier in session, or this is a separate bill as I understand it, right?
This has nothing to do with the extension for the restricted plumber's license whatsoever. Separate bill coming down a little later.
All right, Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney, Mr. Rakowski, maybe is the one I should be asking this to. So, if your rules say landscapers are exempt, why are we bringing a statute forward that would make it more restrictive on the landscapers? Why wouldn't have you done that in the rule process in the first place? Or if your rules aren't completed, you could amend or modify your initial rules before you put out the final rules. Could you not?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Westrum, you're correct. We published the rules for public review. We're in that review period right now. I apologize, I'm not sure how many days, I think it's 60 days. And we were exempting them based on last year's understanding of the independent contractor bill. But when the rules were published, the laborers union who represent, people who work in conjunction with in the construction industry but are not construction workers, pointed out to us that they caught this inconsistency when the rule was published a few weeks ago. And at that time, we've been negotiating with the labor union representatives as well as the 49ers to make this distinction. And what we're attempting to do here, Representative Westrum, is to say that if you are in a commercial or industrial building contract as a laborer, planting trees, building berms, ponds, etc., that is part of a construction project and you'd be subject to the independent contractor law and rules. But if they're a residential landscape for you, it would not be subject to the independent contractor rules or statutes. So I hope that explained it. So the rule will, when the rule is completed, it will reflect this new statute.
So, Mr. Chair, Mr. Rakowski, what So we're basically expanding what we passed last year. What would be the difference between a landscaper on a commercial project of a convenience store or a residential? I mean, why are we lumping in the commercial contractor in this case?
Mr. Rakowski.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Weston, because you're dealing with a general contractor, not with a homeowner. We're putting up a wall, retaining wall, if you will, between those two types of landscaping services.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I guess I got the answer. I would just urge members to think about this and maybe not support going down this road of further expansion of the law that was controversial last year that we passed. But I understand.
Any further discussion on the amendment and the AO 8-1621? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carried. Any discussion on the bill? Seeing none, then Representative Mahoney renews his motion that House File 3034, the first committee engrossment, be recommended to pass as amended and placed on the and re-referred to Ways and Means at a $5,000 cost. And re-referred to Ways and Means as amended. Right. Any further discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Hilty, we're going to go to you next. I understand Representative Tamar is waiting on an amendment, so we'll skip him temporarily and go down to your bill. Representative Hilty, Senate File 3337. Representative Hilty, would you care to move the bill?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I move that Senate File 3337, the second engrossment, be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Okay, the motion is before us. Representative Hilty, we have at least one amendment here, I think, that has your name on it, and then a couple of others. Is this an amendment to put the bill in the order that you'd like to present it?
Mr. Chair, the DE-3 amendment is my amendment, which is a delete all, and it does put the bill in the form I wish it to be considered. I would move adoption of the DE-3 amendment.
Okay, the motion is before us, and this will put the bill in the order that the author would like. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Hilty, I assume you want to explain the bill, and then we have, I think, two amendments, maybe three at this point, that will be coming up a little later. So, Representative Hilty.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, members. What the DE-3 amendment does is incorporate into the original bill a number of bills that have been in the process as standalones. This is at the request of both the Senate and House leadership to aggregate some of these bills so that they could be considered as an energy omnibus bill. I can run through the amendment briefly, which I think is necessary, section by section. Members, section one is a provision from Representative Atkins, House File 3545. Section two is a provision from Representative Eakins, House File 3366. And that continues through Section 4. Beginning with Section 5, provisions from Representative Brainerd's House File 3977. And that continues through Section 8 of the bill. Section 9 is another Briner bill, House File 3843. That's Section 9. Section 10 is Representative Taylor's House File 3857. That continues through Section 12. Section 13 is another provision from Representative Brainerd's House File 3977. Section 14 is Representative Kalin's House File 3717. As our sections 15 and 16. Section 17 is Representative Junkie's Wind Aggregation Bill, House File 3343. And then Section 18 is my bill, which was originally House File 3661 and became part of Senate File 3337. Section 19 goes back to the Atkins bill, which is also incorporated into 3661. That was originally House File 3545. And that language continues through Section 24. Section 25 then is a bill from Representative Hansen, House File 2946. The repealer in Section 26 is part of the Representative Eakin's House File 3366. And members, that is the bill. All of these bills have gone through the process. I think all but two, the language from these bills has been incorporated from bills that are on the general register, with the exception, I think, of the Eakin bill and the Junkie bill, which currently are in Ways and Means.
And Representative Hilty, we do have the amendments that I referenced. The first amendment is by Representative Saylor. It's S-333785, and it's been distributed.
I'll move that amendment.
The motion is before us. If you'd explain the amendment.
Mr. Chair and members, this is just a small piece that actually will bring some language in that is in the companion bill that's going along in the Senate. And what this does is it addresses a need that we have in the state actually for testing and rating of some of the new solar panels that we're starting to see. Currently, we don't have any testing that actually is within our state. If people or small businesses, whatever, have a solar panel that they need to have tested, and they have to comply with a regulation that says they have to go to the SRCC solar rating, I forget what the CC is for. At any rate, they're in Florida. So members, when some small business or large business in the state of Minnesota to comply with Minnesota regulation develops a solar panel, they actually have to send it either to Florida, or in the case of panels that are just addressing solar thermal air-to-air exchanges, they actually have to send them to Canada, requiring them also to meet NAFTA standards. So it costs these businesses a tremendous amount of money just to meet the standards that are required by the state of Minnesota, and current regulation says they have to use the SRCC, which is tantamount to just saying that there's only one testing lab that any of you can use in order to be legal in Minnesota. And this was brought to be by a number of solar panel manufacturers, and there's just a need to make sure that we have testing in Minnesota. I've met with people from the university, also from the Department of Commerce, several solar panel manufacturers, and we've worked on this for quite a while. It's just something that addresses the need for small business in Minnesota. So I ask for your support for this amendment.
Okay, is there any discussion on the amendment, Representative Westbrook?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Saylor, I think there's a good amendment. I've got a business owner in my district that called me a few weeks ago and was telling me about his frustration with getting a certified solar panel that he's working on developing. This would apply to him as well. If he wouldn't have to go through this process, and he said it's about an 18-month wait.
Mm-hmm.
And then if somebody else is in the queue, there's ways they can jump ahead of him and he gets pushed further down. This would deal with all those dilemmas, correct?
Representative Weston, that is correct.
And so, Mr. Chair, members, I would urge our support of this. This would really help out the small business in my district and others that are trying to work on manufacturing these. And he told me, and I haven't had time to even check it out, but he said if he was building them in another state, he was under the impression then he wouldn't have to follow as strict of guidelines as he does, being he's building them in this state. And so whatever it is, I think this is a great move.
Okay, Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Saylor, is this a standalone bill over in the Senate, or is this your amendment here also part of another bill over in the Senate, Senate file over?
Representative Saylor.
Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson, it's not a standalone bill. It's part of one that Senator Dahl has moving over in the Senate. And this, the solar rating testing was put onto the bill that he has over there, and this brings it into compliance, if you will, with the bill that's moving through in the Senate.
So, Mr. Chair,
Representative Anderson,
Representative Saylor, 3337, is that going to match up with Representative Senator Dahl's bill then with this piece in there? Or will the whole bill, 3337, then match up with Senator Dahl's bill?
Representative Saylor.
Mr. Chair, yes, that is the intent, that this will match with that bill.
Thank you.
Representative Heidger. Thanks, Mr. Chair, and again, Representative West and I, too, have Solar Skies out in my district that's been up and running, and we've been working on different solar legislation. We have some rebate program going yet in the state of Minnesota, and I know that we had some meetings of trying to get into the SIP funds, and Representative Hornstein last year had the Solar Dime Bill, and this is going to be a good start for some of these businesses that do need some place to get started with, and this is this will be great for them. And Representative Seifert.
Mr. Chair, to me it looks like we're, and I don't want to discuss an amendment per se, but are we assembling an omnibus energy bill in the Finance Committee? Why wouldn't we be doing this in the Energy Committee where all the testimony's been given and all the expert people have that have listened to this for 2 years know what these international documents are and all these formulas? We're sitting in a finance committee marking, this is just me as an observer, we're sitting in a finance committee marking an omnibus bill up. I'm just, why aren't we doing this in the energy committee? Can someone answer that for me?
I think you're more than an observer, you're part of the committee, but Representative Hilty.
thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Seifert, all these, as I mentioned earlier when I presented the amendment, all of the bills that are being incorporated into this have gone through the process. They all are currently on the general register, or with two bills that are in Ways and Means. But they have gone through the process. So what we're doing here is simply aggregating bills that have been thoroughly vetted.
Any further discussion on the Saylor Amendment?
Mr. Chair, just as a quick follow-up, why are we assembling the omnibus bill in the Finance Committee and not the Energy Committee, I guess is the short question.
Representative Hilty,
Mr. Chair, perhaps you're as well qualified to answer that question as I am, but my understanding, Representative Seifert, is that this is simply a means of expediting the process. I see no reason that any of these bills would have to go back to be reconsidered in the Energy Committee, if we, the question is, are we going to roll them together and try to expedite the process in conferencing with the Senate and getting some of these bills that have had little or no controversy moving or not. If we don't do this, they're all on the general register anyway, and they can come up one by one, but there isn't any real reason that they would need to go back to a policy committee for further consideration, because they've already done that.
Okay, on the Saylor Amendment, we've got the... I guess you are next, yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In the same vein, it's a lot easier to look at bill one at a time than sit here and trying to pick through this mess you're throwing on our table.
Representative Taylor, any further discussion on the amendment? You ready?
Mr. Chair, no.
Okay, with that, all those in favor of the Saylor Amendment, the AFI's amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? No. Motion carried. We have one here now by Representative Heidger. And he's, oh, there he is. Okay, I'm just saying he's gone. So I believe I'll be back. Would you care to move the amendment to the A1?
Representative Garofalo is going to do it.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear.
Representative Garofalo is going to be doing it.
Oh, okay. Representative Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman, I'll move. You said A1, though, right?
A1. That's what I have here. It's the F3337A1.
What might say A2?
That
has anyone ever been distributed, Representative Tigerkin?
Yep.
Is it the same as my amendment that I thought was mine?
Yep.
The only one I have.
Okay.
The same thing.
Mr. Chairman, I'll move the A1 amendment. I just want to make sure that... Why don't we take the... if you want to compare notes there, why don't we take the Westrom amendment next, and then you can figure out which one is... if they're exactly the same or not.
Sounds good, Mr. Chairman.
That would be the... F3337A4, Representative Westrom.
Mr. Chair, I'll move that amendment, the A4.
Okay, Representative Westrom moves the amendment. Any discussion on the amendment, Representative Westrom?
Mr. Chair and Representative Hilty, I trust you've got a copy of this. I was just going to come over and talk to you, and then he called you up to the witness table to present. This is an amendment that Representative Peterson and I a couple different times have talked to you about, and it deals with the setback, and I just with the bill coming forward today, I thought it was an opportunity to add it on and try to foster further discussions. And Mr. Chair, what it does is smaller wind projects based on the PUC decision last winter or fall, lumped large and small projects together. This would take and allow smaller projects, 25 megawatts, under 25 megawatts of wind, to decide themselves where they want to be classified. And it really comes down to setbacks, and the disadvantage for a small project to have as big of a setback as a 100 or 200 megawatt project. And so This would let the smaller projects, typically farmer-owned or locally owned projects, make that determination themselves. And Representative Hilty, I'm not sure if you're okay with adding this on. That would be what I would hope for, and we could smooth out any discussions along the way if there's other issues to work out.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion on the amendments, Representative Hilty?
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Westrom, I appreciate your intending to talk to me about this, but unfortunately we haven't had that conversation. I don't know that I'm actually opposed to the amendment, but Representative Westrom, I would like to have the opportunity to discuss it and to consult with any parties that might be concerned about the amendment before adopting it. I would suggest, since this is a bill that's moving through the process, that if it would be agreeable to you, we could have that discussion, and if everything is as it seems, I would be happy to entertain it as a friendly amendment when the bill comes up on the House floor.
Mr. Chair, and Representative Hilty, I'm fine with that as well. This is the language that Representative Peterson had actually worked out with me, and we had changed it to his desire. But I'd be happy to offer it on the floor and have that discussion with you between now and then.
Mr. Chair, Representative Weston, I appreciate that.
Mr. Chair, I'll withdraw the amendment.
Okay, the amendment is withdrawn. I think the difference, Representative Garofalo, maybe, where is he now? Representative Garofalo, the difference between the two amendments was that one was drafted to the bill and the other to the strike everything the amendment. So you need to move the A2 amendment to so it'll fit in the bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll move the A2 amendment.
Okay, the amendment is before us. If you could care to explain the amendment.
Sure. Mr. Chairman and members, first of all, I want to... Representative Erdahl came to us with this amendment. And what this is currently, under the eminent domain laws we have, there are appraisal and negotiation requirements that exist, and there are exceptions for public service corporations that exist. What this does is it scratches that exemption for just the portion regarding appraisal and negotiation requirements. And as was evidenced by the conversation I just had a second ago, there are some concerns from people about it, but I did agree to offer this amendment, and I'm keeping my word to do that. So I'm moving the A2 amendment, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, the motion is before us, Representative Hilty.
Mr. Chair, I have had a discussion about the amendment with Representative Erdahl. Researched it as best I was capable. I am not aware of any opposition to the amendment. I guess there's someone here that wishes to testify in opposition to it. Perhaps you should invite them to do so, but I was prepared to accept the amendment.
Okay, any further discussion? Is there anybody that wants to accept the invitation by the author that they have a concern?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I don't know if this is going to be...
Representative Pease.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Garofalo mentioned in his remarks that there might be people that have concerns about it, and we have an exception for public service corporations from our eminent domain laws, and this would just make the appraisal requirements come into... apply to them as well. So they'd have to exchange appraisals, and if they underbid the appraisal, they'd have to pay the difference and that kind of thing.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Thiessen, first of all, just the initial point, they do have concerns about this. I just want to be transparent. This is not peace in the valley. As was evidence, I was holding out, there are concerns about it, so I want to be transparent about that. Second of all, whatever rules laws we have in place regarding appraisals and negotiation requirements for eminent domain proceedings for non-public service corporations, whatever those are, this would apply to that. It just simply put them under that body of law.
So again, is there, being that the maker of the motion says that there may be concerns, is there anyone here that wants to comment, Representative Mahoney?
Representative Garofalo, you've implied that there were people who were not comfortable with this particular amendment. Could you be a little bit more forthcoming? Who's not happy with this particular amendment?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mahoney, let me clarify my remarks or refine my remarks on that point. Whether they support it or opposed to it, they have concerns about it because apparently they were not briefed that this amendment was coming, so they haven't had the time to review the statute book and see how it fully would impact this exception under public service corporations. So I think the concern is maybe not what it does, it's the concern about what they don't know it does. Those are my words, not other people's.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe you could clarify who it is that wants to clarify it some more. Because, I mean, we had a huge hours and hours of floor fight on eminent domain, and all of a sudden now I'm going to vote to what appears to me, to weaken it. So I'm I just want to know.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mahoney, it does not weaken it, it strengthens it. It goes the other way. It's exactly the opposite of what you think. Yeah.
And being that there may be some concerns, and I'm not even sure who the proponents really are from our brief discussion here, maybe you could enlighten us in that regard. Beyond who brought you the amendment.
Sure. Mr. Chairman and members, I'm a proponent for it. What it does is, again, it takes the same appraisal and negotiation requirements that we have under statute to cities and cities and forms of government that use eminent domain proceedings, and it removes the public service corporation exemption. Just for that, not the other exemptions, just the appraisal and negotiation requirements.
Mr. Chair, I would suggest this isn't the place to be doing this, and we don't know. The reason that this exemption, and I was, involved in the discussions around the eminent domain bill, and there was specific discussions about public service corporations as part of that discussion and negotiation. And we don't know anything about this. We don't know the reason that that exemption exists. But they didn't know. I would suggest that we either have this withdrawn or vote it down.
I was just going to suggest that perhaps rather than putting this on the bill at this point with lack of information, that perhaps the proponents beyond yourself, you said you were one, visit with you and maybe Representative Hilty and get that clarified a little bit before we attach it to a bill that's coming through this late in the session. Representative Heidegger?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, just a little, thank you, a little more enlightenment what's going on. There's a pipeline issue going through Representative Erdahl's district and mine, and we've had some serious issues last year already with this pipeline going. They have not worked with folks, but some of the property has been going through. And they have had no means, they have a very difficult time negotiating with this pipeline. I had, for example, one farmer out there that had all of his drainage lines clogged and everything else, and when the pipeline went through and not properly restored in a given time, because of that he lost all of his soybeans and everything else. We fought over this issue. So right now, this pipeline is still coming on down through from Canada, and that is of the issue, and that's what created some of the controversy in Representative Erdahl's district and mine. We have had individual owners that this pipeline is still under construction and still going forth. So there are issues there that they have, Leigh and me, and I've been very involved in negotiations between the parties. But it's something that I think needs to be addressed now and not after the fact, because this is a deal with the pipeline.
The author share any thoughts with us? It looked like you were about to say something, and then we recognize, or should I go as Representative Wagenius first? Did you want to hear?
Well, Mr. Chair, I was just going to suggest I do think that I understand the issues surrounding this amendment, and I think that it is actually relatively innocuous, but if there are reservations that people have about it, I would suggest that we clear that up and have the initiator of the amendment prepared to discuss it further, and I'd be happy to take this up when we consider the bill on the House floor.
Representative Wagenius.
As the initiator is discussing it, I can see how it applies to public service corporations, but we also gave eminent domain authority to a proposed power plant in our northern region, and they can bring power lines through all of our northern suburbs down into the Twin Cities area. And I might expect that we would hold them to a different standard, a more liberal standard than this, and that's a concern I have.
Okay, I think that's
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman and members, I want to touch base on this point that this is not the place for this provision to be amended in this bill. You know, you're the ones creating an energy omnibus bill in the Finance Committee. So if you want proper jurisdiction over this, if you want the committee to review an omnibus bill and create it, then build the bill in the Energy Committee. Don't come to the Finance Committee where I'm going to offer an amendment to it.
I think Representative Filkey pointed out that the bill that he brought forward had already passed in its forms. Is that correct, Representative Filkey? So it's not that there are new issues, and it's not that they haven't been to the Energy Committee, with the exception, I assume, of this amendment hasn't been there. That would be what's different. Representative Wagenia.
Yes, thank you, Representative Garofalo. I was not complaining about having the amendment in this committee. My question was, would, if it applies to a public service corporation, why wouldn't you have it apply to a merchant plant that is providing electricity?
Representative Garofalo. Mr. Chairman, Representative Wagenia, first of all, my comments weren't about you, so that's not what I was talking about. Second of all, I don't have an answer to your question.
Representative Wagenia, it wasn't done. Representative Wagenia.
Okay, I would be glad to vote for the provision if it treats everybody the same, and I hope that's in the next iteration of this.
Representative Chunky.
Well, I agree with Representative Wagenia. This is a good amendment. There's nothing wrong with it. Of course, I'm an appraiser, so it's full employment for appraisers, so it's full disclosure. But I did work on the last with Representative Thiessen, and for many years, and Representative Queasley, we've worked on this issue with MnDOT and others. And I do think anyone who's dealing with public rights of way and public lands and public monies and everything else should adhere to those same standards that Representative Thiessen brought forth in his bill. And basically what those standards are, it describes how you share appraisals, how much can be paid for the different types of appraisals, et cetera, et cetera. So I don't think this is a bad thing. I think it's a good public policy and a good consumer issue.
Okay, any further discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No.
No.
Chair is in doubt. All those in favor of the amendment, raise your hand. Those opposed. Maybe including the okay, being 18 yeses and 9 noes, the amendment is adopted. Any further discussion on the bill? Representative Mahoney.
Representative Hilke, on page 15, section 22, the mobile air conditioner refrigerant restriction, I had some questions when this came through last time. Did you ever follow through and find out if any other states were banning this, or what the cost was for a mechanic to change out your to add or take out refrigerant out of your car?
Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney, I haven't had an opportunity to do that yet. It's only been about 2 days since we considered it, so I believe. So. But yes, I'm certainly willing to do that.
Any further discussion, Representative Seifert?
My question is along the line of Representative Mahoney, actually, that, I'm looking at both pages 14 and 15 on what type of penalties are there if someone sells a refrigerant in a mobile air conditioner. So is that in any car, or is that like in a RV, or specifically the top of page 15, Representative Hilty, the mobile air conditioner refrigerant restriction? No person may buy or sell a refrigerant designed to be in a mobile air conditioner holding less than 15 pounds. What
What is that?
Representative Hilton.
Mr. Chair, Representative Seifert, that applies to the small canisters that people sometimes use to service their own air conditioning units. I should point out about this, and as I mentioned earlier, this is actually Representative Atkins' bill. I don't know if he's here. I invited him to be here in case the questions arose, but I should point out that this was one of the unanimously adopted recommendations of the Climate Change Advisory Group in its preliminary report to the governor, along with recommendations in House File 3401 that we discussed last week. The gases that are contained in these refrigerants are orders of magnitude more potent greenhouse gases than carbon dioxide or any of the ones that we are more commonly aware of, like 1,500 times. So what the bill provides for basically is reporting on leakage of those gases where they are contained, but the provision about the sale of the small canisters is because it's a process that if it's performed by someone that is not trained in how to do it, has the potential for considerable leakage, not to mention that there's no control over what happens to a half-used canister or any of the ways that this might be used appropriately or inappropriately. So that's really the reason for that provision, as best as I can explain.
Hey, Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Hilty. I'm wondering about the solar power carve-out with the renewable energy standout. And to my knowledge, isn't this the first carve-out we've had? And I'm just wondering if this is just what this is all about, why we're just picking this, this specific niche. And in expense-wise, I'm trying to figure out how expensive is this in relation to some of the other renewables that we've had? If you could just maybe, since I'm not on the Energy Committee, talk a little bit about is it the intention to move forward with different carve-outs for, you know, this percentage of this and this percentage of that, and, you know, specifically why we have this one in here?
Mr. Chair, Representative Pepin, that would certainly not be my preference. I'm not certain that carve-outs of any sort are necessarily the best way to proceed. But in this particular case, the intention was to give a jump start to something that I think we all really want to see happen on a much greater scale than is currently occurring. Representative Brainerd is the author of the House bill, and if you would like her to further explain the rationale, I'm sure she'd be happy to do so.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pepin, I agree with Representative Hilty's comments that this isn't intended to be the first in a long line of carve-outs. Solar is considered to be one of our most reliable energy resources. The sun is there for us to take advantage of. We don't have to produce that energy. We simply have to figure out how to funnel it. So very much parallel to wind, the goal is to take advantage of what nature has given us. This proposal is what I would call a very modest proposal. The original bill had a 2% carve-out, and this is down to 0.0125, which is only 4 megawatts. It really effectively simply replaces the solar rebate program, which will expire in 2009. The department approves of it, and at the time it was heard in the House, the utility companies raised no objection. That's a broad outline of the motive for proposing this bill.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hilty and Brainard, I'm not going to make a motion to take this out now, but I guess my concern is cutting out a specific niche, and I think we have to be careful going forward looking at how much. I think the mandate was in itself was very controversial in the past, and I did support that at the time. But I think the more we mandate how much has to come from this and how much has to come from that, I think it gets really hard. And Representative Brainard, I agree with you. And I think that's why some of your comments about we have to work with what nature provided, and that's why I'm such a big proponent of nuclear power. And that's why I think nuclear power should be in the nuclear, or it should be in the renewable mandate. But that's another story for another day, perhaps. And but going forward, I think that, you know, when this hits the floor, I think we all need to give a lot of consideration whether it makes sense to carve out a specific niche, because it set the precedent, and this certainly would be the first one in others, I believe. So that's just my thought for today.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Hilty, I appreciate your greenhouse gas emission reduction attainment report. I think they're very important. But I see that it's only for energy and PCA, and since about a third of the greenhouse gases come from transportation, I wonder if there's a reason to include transportation policy as to think about that as you go to the floor, whether there's a reason to include that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lagini, so I'd be happy to discuss that with you further.
Thank you.
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair, I'm really concerned about all the definitions that are in here, especially from the Atkins bill, and the concern that we're going to make this now statute and these defining definitions of global warming, global warming potential, or GWP, and so forth and so on. So, Mr. Chair, I'd like to have a roll call on this bill.
A roll call has been requested. Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Hilty, on page 13, subdivision 6, the definition of global warming potential, it references the fourth assessment report of the climate change 2007 International Panel on Climate Change. Do you know, is there going to be a fifth report?
Mr. Chair, Representative Garofalo, I don't know. I presume that there will be. I think that this has become an annual event.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Garofalo. Mr. Chairman, Representative Hilty, if there's a fifth report, presumably there would be new information, which would be more updated. Wouldn't it be wise for us, regardless of my opinions of the bill, but wouldn't it be wise of us to be pointing at a dynamic model with the most updated information as opposed to a static model, which is looking at, which unavoidably, by the nature of time, is going to be an old and outdated information?
Representative Hilton.
Mr. Chair, Representative Garofalo, I believe that this is simply referring not to a quantitative measure, but simply to a way of describing the potential. You may be wrong about that, but I don't believe that this actually is referencing a specific measurement.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Grapple.
Since we're referencing a specific report, and I actually had the opportunity to sit down and read some of this, the that report, how much does it say the planet has warmed in the last 100 years within that report?
Representative Hilton.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Garofalo, since you have read the report and I haven't, perhaps you're better qualified to answer that question than I am.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hilty, maybe that's why I'm not offering this bill.
Mr. Chairman, my recollection is, and I was actually, I think I know the answer to this, I think the answer is between 0.4 tenths of 1 degree and 6 tenths of 1 degree, is what I think the report says. And in terms of its predictions for the next 100 years, and again, I'm referencing Subdivision 6 here, with regards to the emissions of greenhouse gas to contribute to global warming over a 100-year period, what was the report's prediction on the amount of global warming? How much was the temperature going to increase over the next 100 years in that report?
Mr. Chair, Representative Garofalo, not having read the report before I answered your first question, I really haven't had time between that question and this one.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Hilty, good answer. My understanding, and again I'm going by memory here, is that the report estimates that the planet will warm in between 1.2 degrees and 4.8 degrees, or a 400% variance in what their prediction is. Now, I'm not going to ask you any more questions about the report, but I will tell you that there's some very interesting points they make in this report. And one of them is they state that human behavior cannot be predicted. So with regards to the very complex model of the planet warming or not warming, they can't predict human behavior. They don't know what's going to happen. But at the same time, when they're coming up with these very, quote-unquote, accurate or specific measurements of how much global warming is going to take place, they say that the global warming is taking place based off of human behavior. So the very things they are measuring on the end, they are saying in advance of that, they can't measure the basis for those things. So I'm not much of a global warming guy. I did, like I said, I have had a chance to read this report. But members, I would just ask you to sit down, grab a nice glass of wine, sit down and read this fine report that was put together by global climatologists, and ask yourself how we cannot predict human behavior, but we can predict the result of the human behavior we can't predict. It's amazing.
Well, Mr. Chair, I see Representative Atkins has finally entered the room after 2 days of testimony on his air conditioner bill. So if he'd come to the counter and ask, I do have an oral amendment that I'd like to do on page 14, Mr. Chair. And Representative Atkins, I don't know if you were here or heard about the testimony the other day. This whole section is fairly weird, I think, is what the committee decided. And Representative Hilty didn't deny that, but he was carrying the bill on your behalf. So, and Representative Mahoney isn't here. He's asking a lot of questions about the 15 pounds, and that's part of it. My concern is basically on the website posting. At the last committee, I asked if anyone here in the room had gone to the Commerce or the AG's website before purchasing a car to understand how air conditioning systems work or anything else, and no one had. And I don't know that anyone will, Representative Atkins, but if that's going to stay in here, and we're going to go to the expense of posting this on the website, that's fine. But my other pet peeve here is I don't know where this language came from in 14.29 to 14.33. It's poorly drafted. It's poorly written. And I'm not an English major, but I've got an oral amendment to that language, Mr. Chair, if Representative Atkins and Hilty don't mind.
I suspect you better share what the amendment is before you ask.
Here's my amendment. And if staff is ready, I think they can follow it. It's something I should have written.
But our amendment in one word, but let's go slow. So we now find the location.
Page 14.29. Delete the word can and insert the word may. After refrigerants, put a period. 14.30, delete the entire line. 14.31.
Now you're going the entire line beyond the period. Okay.
Entire line. 14.30. Delete the entire line. 14.31. Delete the word two. After compare, put an F. Delete information about. After the, put potential. 14.32, delete the last five words when making a decision to. 14.33, delete purchase A and follow that by the word of, O-F,
and after vehicle put an F. Now I'll read it. Vehicle air conditioner systems, conditioning systems may leak refrigerants. Information provided in the chart compares the potential global warming effects of refrigerant leakage from different makes and models of vehicles.
Okay, you move the amendment. Does everybody have the amendment?
Yep.
Okay, and
I thought you said one word.
I'm not sure whether it's Hilty or Atkins that wants to respond. Being it's just your section of the bill, Representative Atkins, maybe you should respond to the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Junk, if you would do me a favor and read that once more for me.
Sure.
I may have missed one of your...
Sure. And the reason, just before I read it, that I redid it so you can think about it, you know, statements like some leak more than others, well, some leak less than others, and some, you know, may, can or may, I think may is used more commonly. If you go to the one of the longer, information is in there twice in a sentence. That's a redundancy. And again, I'm not an English major, but it's just very poorly written. That's all right, here's how it reads again. Vehicle air conditioning systems may leak refrigerants. Period. Information provided in the chart compares the potential global warming effects of refrigerant leakage from different makes and models of vehicles.
Thank you, Representative Atkins. Mr. Chair, Representative Junkie, I appreciate you walking through that once more. I have missed a word that didn't make sense with what I had written down. Lawyers get paid by the word, so we prefer it to be longer, yeah. But I think that language is acceptable, Mr. Chair.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, then all voters. Representative
Chair, sorry, just clarification. Representative Junkie, what you just read is what is left, or that is what you're deleting?
Mr. Chair, that's how it will read once I'm done deleting. So that's what's left.
So we can delete that in the next amendment.
If you want.
Let's see, we have Representative Hilty.
Mr. Chair, I was just going to mention, I was an English major, and I appreciate the Representative Junkie's work on the language, which I think actually is much more clear.
Okay, any further discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Any further discussion on the bill? Representative Westrom.
Mr. Chair, I'm going to ask House Research staff, with the Junkie amendment that just passed, if they would be able to specify which lines need to be deleted to delete the remaining language that Representative Junkie had read. And if you want to continue with discussion.
I think they can probably do that pretty quickly.
Okay.
Because as soon as we're done with that amendment, if there are no others, I'd like to go to a vote on the bill. So,
all right.
Do you have that information for Representative Westrom?
Mr. Chair and Representative Westrom, I believe if you want, what you want to do is delete Clause 2.
Mr. Chair, I'll move that amendment. Move to delete Clause 2.
And just to be clear, on page 14, line 27, delete the number 1. And on page 14, line 28, delete semicolon and insert a period. And then delete clause 2.
Does everybody have that amendment? Okay, everybody has it. That motion is before us. Which of you would like to comment?
Mr. Chair, if I might, is that a written amendment or an oral amendment?
That was an oral amendment.
You know what? I was looking around for it here, thinking I must have just simply missed something.
No, it's an oral amendment. We've had two oral amendments in a row here now. So do you have it?
Well, Mr. Chair, if we understand the amendment, what Representative Westrom is proposing to do is remove the entire clause that Representative Junkie just amended. Is that correct?
That would be the intent of the, or that is the amendment, not the intent of the amendment.
Well, Mr. Chair,
and Westrom,
I'm going to actually withdraw this amendment at this time. But I would like to just maybe Representative Hilty could give us an explanation of this whole section. the purpose. Now, either it's deja vu, or I remember a fairly lengthy discussion, and I think it was in this committee when this similar bill came through a previous time. And so, Mr. Chair, I'm puzzled. In fact, I think Representative Mahoney actually led the charge of how crazy this was, and who we're putting out of business, et cetera, et cetera. Representative Hilty, just explain what is this section for, and what's the drive behind it, and what's the impact going to be?
Representative Hilty?
Mr. Chair, I prefer that the author of the bill respond to that question.
Representative Atkins?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Weston, just so we're clear, are you referring to that particular clause with regard to the language that Representative Junkie just amended, or are you talking about the entire section, my entire bill?
I guess your entire bill, Representative Atkins.
Representative Atkins.
And, Mr. Chair, Representative Wester, without trying to go or take too long, the essence of it is that there are certain gases, compounds, that are super warmers. When we talk of carbon being an issue with respect to global warming, and we talk about a pound of carbon, just by comparison's sake, some of these gases that we're talking about here, sulfur hexafluoride, for example, the sorts of things we're talking about are anywhere from 11,000, 20,000 times the potency, 20,000 times the impact of a pound of carbon, and many of which, and we took, I thought, a very appropriate and friendly way of getting at this is that there need to be reasonable alternatives available. It requires reporting, but it gets after some of these gases, the so-called super warmers, that if we think we're tackling the issue of global warming by simply taking on carbon, we barely scratch the surface. And for many of these gases that we're talking of, there are reasonable and cost-effective alternatives that are available. So we're not talking about anything onerous that we're asking in this part of the bill, and that's why I brought it forward.
Mr. Chair, my question relates to page 15, the strategic tree planting. It says the PUC and Commissioner Commerce shall treat the strategic planting of trees and shrubs on the property of a retail customer provided electric or gas service by a public utility, municipal utility, or co-op electric association as promoting energy efficiency and eligible for direct expenditures and expense recovery under the statute as an energy conservation improvement. Now, I look in my community, just in Lyon County, everybody either has Marshall Municipal Utilities or Lincoln Lyon Electric. So what does this mean? Everybody who plants a tree who's a customer of them gets to have reimbursement for their trees if it's planted next to a building and it might provide some shade?
Mr. Chair, Representative Seifert, I don't know if Mr. Bull is here. He might want to address this. This is Representative Hansen's bill that started out very broad, and my understanding is that this has been basically reduced to a pilot project in consultation with the Department of Commerce. I had the same question that you had initially, Representative Seifert. My understanding is that that's not at this point how that's supposed to work.
Okay. The way I read it, Mr. Chair, Representative Hilty, is that from July 1 of 08 to June 30th of 09, anyone who's a customer of a utility, municipal or co-op, which is pretty much everyone in my district, that's strategically plants trees. So, Johnny Appleseed is not eligible as he scatters his seeds about the forest, but everybody else who plants a tree or a shrub next to a building that might have some shade over it or whatever gets their trees paid for, at least the way I'm reading this, gets their trees paid for by someone. And I guess the second question is, where is this money coming from? Is it from the
utility from this where they eat the conservation money and they have to pay people for more efficient refrigerators and things like that? Is it coming out of that fund or is it coming out of somewhere else? So those are my two questions.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pfeiffer, I'm Mike Bull. I'm the Deputy Director of the Office of Energy Security at the Department of Commerce, and we oversee and administer this conservation improvement program. The way we read this provision is the way the program generally works is the utilities make proposals to us as to how they are going to implement their conservation improvement requirements. And as a general rule, for the investor-owned utilities, we have approval over those. And for the or the self-regulated utilities, it's more of an advice and integrate. So the way that we would operate this is that they would make a proposal as to how they would do the strategic tree planting, and we would advise them as to whether or not we thought that was an appropriate conservation improvement practice. So it's not quite as open-ended as you are suggesting, but it isn't as closed either.
Mr. Chair, I'm just thinking if you're I'm thinking in my district, you're a fairly well-to-do person building a brand new house out in the country, and you want all your landscaping paid for by someone else. Wouldn't you say let's just strategically plant these trees so they provide shade at some point in the future, and you could have most of your landscaping paid for by someone else?
Mr. Chair, Representative Seifert, no. They'd have to, A, convince the utility that that's an appropriate expenditure of their conservation dollars, and B, that convince the regulators as well. And then the flip side of it also is that they have to show that the strategic tree planting meets conservation cost-effectiveness requirements, has clear energy savings outcomes, etc. So it's more than there has to be a showing that this is a true and beneficial conservation practice, more than just planting trees here and there.
I guess the last question, Mr. Chair, is when would it be used then? We plant a tree next to something to provide shade, and you're moving somewhat full-grown trees then to a building to provide so the air conditioner doesn't run as much, or what example can you give me where it might be used?
Mr. Chair, Representative Seifert, we're not excited about this. we've worked to a point where we think we're okay with it, but because it has these built-in protections in terms of having to demonstrate cost effectiveness and such. The argument is, as you put forward, that their shading would reduce using the trees. The shade would reduce potentially the air conditioning requirements at a facility, that sort of application. So we won't see the benefits of tree planting for a number of years as the trees get bigger.
Mr. Chair, the question that I had a couple ago was, where does the money come from? And wouldn't it be better to use it for rebates? If I remember right, in Marshall, we use that fund for rebates for people when they buy an appliance that's more efficient to use energy, that you just get so much, you get a lot more, or light bulbs or dishwashers. Wouldn't that be a lot better use of the money if that's the fund that's coming out of than whatever this is trying to do?
Mr. Chair, Representative Seifert, that is the money that this is paid for out of, which is out of the requirements on utilities to spend a certain amount of their revenues on conservation dollars. This could, as the utility puts their project together, it could come to us as a rebate program, or it could come to us as a direct installation of trees. In either case, they would have to demonstrate a cost effectiveness and conservation purpose to the project.
Mm-hmm. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, Representative Hilty, do you have a fiscal note on the entire bill? Since this is the Finance Committee, I'm wondering if you've got some fiscal
costs involved with all these options and renewable energy projects that are in here, what they're going to cost?
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, the bills that have had any fiscal implications have gone through this committee previously. As I mentioned, I believe two of the bills that are included in the Delete All Amendments are currently in the possession of the Committee on Ways and Means. I don't believe that any of the bills, as I recall, whether they have any funding provisions in them or not, had any implications for the general fund. I believe that a couple of the bills are channeling money from the Renewable Development Fund or from Conservation Improvement Fund, but I'm quite certain that none of them have any implication for the general fund.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Hilty, do you have some numbers on? I refresh my memory as to some of the costs of these projects, and if they've gone through here, I don't recall the exact numbers. Do you have them here so we could take a look at them?
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, no, I don't at the moment, but I'm sure any of the bills that have gone through my committee, and I believe all of these have, I do have fiscal notes for, and I'd be happy to provide those for you.
Before we vote on this bill?
Not this afternoon, but before we vote on the bill in the House floor, certainly.
Thank you.
Okay, any further discussion? Seeing none. Representative Heitzberg.
Thank you. Representative Hilty, and I was hoping Mr. Bull would be up there yet. I know we've got some wind issues that I think you and I have talked a little bit about. I know that out in my district, I see that there's some legislation in regards to contracting manufacturers on behalf of participants, et cetera, et cetera. We've had the issue with Florida Power and Light and some of the things that have been done out there in western Minnesota. That is one issue. The other issue of greater cost or concern is the wind rights, so many rods and things of this sort. I know that when you start dealing with the DNR, it really puts a limit on to where these wind towers can go. And I know that we've addressed the issue of doing a grandfathering clause, and I think, Mr. Bull, you and I have talked about that. But we've got a lot of entities that put a lot of time and energy. I think I've got about 14 or 15 different entities in my district that are looking at pursuing wind energy. And we've had probably 10, 12 meetings this summer where we spent extensive time with the Department of Commerce. We've had down, we've had the DNR, we've had all the entities having to do with wind legislation at our meetings. And, you know, we have some serious concerns, and these folks are ready to go. And it's just, you know, those issues need to be addressed, and I don't know where we're at for sure on this. And
Mr. Bull?
Representative Heidgerk, and I think this is the subject of an amendment that Representative Westrom had offered and then withdrawn pending additional discussion. The issue that we have, just for members' background, the last session we passed some legislation dealing with siting of wind turbines. The Public Utilities Commission then followed up and issued general permit standards that apply to projects regardless of size, setbacks, property setbacks, things that protect wetlands, that sort of thing. The concern that we have, that went into effect in January, the concern we have about the proposal that Representative Westrom is proposing is that it overturns that recent Public Utilities Commission discussion without fully fleshing out the issues. What I've told the folks from your area is that we're interested in this in a very meaningful and sincere way, and I think that they're working very hard to get around these, to get through these issues, is that if we can identify a grandfathering clause that would allow those projects that but for the commission decision in January would get built this construction season, if we can sort of identify the parameters of that of those projects, and we would support that grandfathering, and then an overall discussion about the larger questions that you're raising about wind rights and such, and come back with a discussion at the Public Utilities Commission and hear about how to appropriately handle that. I think that though that the approach that I've seen from Representative Peterson and Westrum is just too broad for us to be supportive of and would have significant concerns about.
Okay, seeing no further discussion, Representative Hilty renews his motion that Senate File 3337, second engrossment, be reckoned and passed as amended and re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Clerk, take the roll.
Carlson?
Aye.
Anderson?
No.
Clark? Cornish? Earhart?
No.
Simpson? Groffalo?
No.
Riley?
Yes.
Hackbar?
No.
Hausman? Heikertzen?
Pass.
Hilty?
Aye.
House? Huntley? Yarrow?
Aye.
Dunkey?
Aye.
Kahn?
Aye.
Colt? Franceschi? Leader? Mahoney? Mariani?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Murphy? Oshimba?
Yes.
Yeah. Pimar?
Aye.
Kowalski? Pepin?
Nope.
Poppy?
No.
Riccolino? Taylor?
Yes.
Seifert?
No.
Sertage?
Yes.
Severson? Simon?
Aye.
Slawick? Solberg?
Yes.
Thiessen?
Yes.
Wagenius?
Yes.
Walker?
Yes.
Westrum?
No.
Okay, being 14 ayes, 8 nays, and 2 abstentions, the bill has passed. The next bill up is Representative Nelson, Senate File 2775. And the chair moves that Senate File 2775, the third engrossment, be recommended to pass and placed in the General Register. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Committee. The reason this bill is before us today is basically, if you see the fiscal notes, it's in there now, there is no fiscal impact on for the bill. But as it was originally drafted in the original fiscal note that came with it, there was some fiscal impact because we were requiring a Department of Commerce to create a list. And the original bill was kind of a shot across the bow of the utility companies. And we got support from them. We got them to talk to the League of Cities and come up with an agreement. And we kind of got peace in the valley here now with this bill. It creates a reporting process by which utilities during the non-winter shutoff rule would on October 1st or October 15th and November 1st, by request of the cities, would send a list of properties that have had the gas or the electric or whichever is the main source of heat for that building, would report to those cities which properties had the gas or had the heat shut off. So that they could then, the municipalities could then go and shut the water off so that they wouldn't have the damage that you can see in this picture that was in your packet to housing stock. And then during the winter shutoff rule period, when they shut the heat or shut the main source of heat off in a building, they would, the cities that request it, would get send an immediate notification to those cities so that then they could go afterwards and shut the heat off. Or to shut the water off. And this is just to preserve housing stock, and it's kind of, like I said, it's created peace in the valley now that everyone agrees it's a good common sense bill, and it'll help preserve these properties that are in foreclosure or that people aren't living in, and so that they can be resold at some time in the future, and not, as has happened in Representative Dietrich's district, they had to tear down 4 houses this winter because of the damage that was done. And this is, if you could look at the picture here, this is a house actually in Brooklyn Park. And this was brought to me by the city engineer of Brooklyn Park, that some way of getting the cities and the utilities to tell them when the heat shut off so they can shut the water off.
Okay, I think this is a pretty telling picture here. Any discussion on the bill? Representative Yarrow.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, yeah, I'm glad you brought this bill. I've been thinking about this for quite a while. As I've noticed, houses, pipes freezing and so on. I thought maybe the loan, bank that repossessed the house, the building should be responsible too, but you're handling it with the governmental units. I think that any bank that repossesses, financial institution that repossesses the home, should make sure that utilities do not freeze. It would be, because a lot of times these loans are guaranteed by the federal government and so on, and it's a loss to the, the government and everybody involved.
We did have some talk to the with the banks, but a situation that actually a house that's next door to mine that was foreclosed on a year and a half ago, and I guess the last February went up for auction and has been rebought, but it still sits empty. And the people, the heat shut off in that house, and so then in case of that, there isn't a foreclosed or a bank involved in it. The people own the house, they bought it on spec, they'll turn around and make some money on it, but it sits empty still. And there are a lot of these properties in my neighborhood and throughout our, not just in the cities, but throughout the state of Minnesota, where people have moved out, have been foreclosed, or just stopped making their utility payments, and so we need to make sure that we preserve the stock and preserve the tax base of our city. Okay, any further discussion? Seeing none, then, all those in favor of that Senate file 2775, the third engrossment, be recommended to pass and placed on the general register, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Only half as controversy as the last one.
No.
maybe we'll pick up a little time here. Representative Dill. Who serves on the Representative Committee? Representative Solberg moves the Higher Education Workforce Development Policy and Finance Division report for House File 3602. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. And Representative Solberg moves that House File 3602 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. And to get the bill in the order that the author would like, I have an amendment here that I'll offer H3602A1. Chair moves the amendment. Would you care to... Okay, all
I'm
those...
I'm question, Mr. Chair, I'll just explain the bill.
As funny, this is the author's amendment. Put it in the form you'd like. So all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Bill.
Thank you, Chair Carlson. And the bill is about business subsidies and raising what is not a considered not a business subsidy. If you look on, I don't have the actual engrossment, but I think it's on line 1.15. It says the original law says a business subsidy of not less than $25,000. We're raising that to $200,000, and in regarding business loans or guarantees from $75,000 to $200,000. And the reason for this, members, is that the $25,000, those numbers are just too low. When you're doing a redevelopment district, you can't even or a housing district or any type of work where there's any kind of new development in a community, you can't blacktop a parking lot for the cost of what is in the current bill or in the current law. So the proposal is to raise those. Now that caused a certain amount of problem with Representative with the former representative who was the author of this, Representative Clark. and it caused some problems by raising these numbers. It would delete out or some of the reporting requirements relative to jobs and things of that nature. And that's what the amendment does, is it puts back in things such as keeping the criteria for subsidies and guarantees at the former levels of 25 and 75,000, and also the amendment. Well, that's basically what it is. It gets all of those former requirements back into the bill, even though we're raising the cap. So one of the situations is, as a former city administrator, we would do a redevelopment district, or we'd do a development district for that matter, or we would just have someone propose a new business, and we would be airing all of their financial information in the public, a lot of which was sensitive to them. It caused them problems with competitiveness. And also, another thing that happened is we never had people, I don't think in my 11 years as a city administrator, I ever had a single person ever come to a meeting, except for the city council, to discuss these things. Even though we published them in the newspapers, made them known, people just, they don't come. So that's the purpose for raising these up, so that we lessen the amount of, we keep records of what is happening in the archives of a city or a local unit of government or the state for that matter, but yet we raise the threshold so that we don't have to have all that information quite as wildly public.
Okay, any discussion on the bill? Representative Tamer.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Dillard, so you're basically saying that the city could provide a subsidy for $175,000 and there'd be no public notice whatsoever. No opportunity for the public to weigh in to see if this is a good expenditure of public dollars, and up to $500,000 of state money without any public notice. Am I reading that correctly?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Paymeyer, in the case of a business subsidy, we're raising it from $25,000 to $200,000, and then on line 2.30, we're raising it. In the case of a business loan, where a local entity is loaning to a business or making a loan guarantee, from $75,000 to $200,000.
Well, Representative Paymeyer.
Yeah, Mr. Representative Dill, that may, to me, when we're subsidizing an industry, I think the public deserves the right to know, and I'm troubled by raising those dollar amounts to that extent.
Mr. Chairman, the public does have a right to know, Mr. Chairman, Representative Paymeyer, when none of these things are done behind closed doors. They are done in an open environment where a meeting of a city council or a local unit of government or the state, for that matter, has a notice requirement, just as this committee does, to post the agenda and what is on the agenda. And in the case of a city, it's at least 3 business days, not including the day of posting. In the case of a small city, like I managed, in 3 public places which are known and listed at the city hall. And in the case of a larger city, it must be the agenda would be put in the newspaper, as well as 3 additional places that are commonly inhabited by citizens of the community, the township or the county or the city or the local unit of government. So it would not be as if there were not any public notice, as Representative Paymeyer has suggested.
Yeah, that's not what the bill says, and I sat on the city council for 8 years, and I think this is moving away from accountability about how we use taxpayer money. You look on page 3, section 3, it talks about when you have to have a public notice and a hearing on the subsidy, and you've raised the threshold to $200,000 for local government and $500,000 for the state. That's what the bill says.
And, Mr. Chairman, that is correct. That it says a public hearing. However, the proceedings of a local unit of government or the county or the township, whatever we're dealing with, the proceedings of that have their own special requirements that are separate from this, that any type of subsidy that's issued under this type of arrangement would have to be reported and discussed at that meeting, and those are public and have their own posting requirements. So, I understand Representative Paymeyer's concern, and we have attempted to address that in some of the language on 3.15, stating that the business, that cities will still have to have the criteria for amounts over 25 and 75,000 for job creation and tracking of that, and that also then the public notice, a special public notice on starting in subdivision 5, which is around line 3.22 of a special public notice for local subsidies raised from 100 to 200. So under 200, we'd have to have the notice on top of notices that are generally posted by law by your local unit of government.
Representative Tamar, you Representative Fulbert?
Mr. Chair, I just want to point out the 3.21, the $500,000 for the state government is already current law.
Correct.
Okay, any further discussion? Representative Clark.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry I came back in late. Did you amend this bill today? And I'm sorry, what's the number of the amendment?
Did we vote on the amendment, Mr. Chairman?
Yes, so there's an author's amendment, and it's put in the order that the author wanted to present it.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Clark.
I'm sorry, but I do need to go back. This is legislation I worked on for a lot of years. We called it the corporate welfare bill. We wanted to make sure that corporations were as accountable to the public subsidy as we require other people and other groups who are on public assistance. And I know that this waters that down, and that is the intention, because my understanding from the people who have talked to me about it is that there's a sense that it's too much of a burden for some folks, but it does definitely water it down. And one of the things I'm concerned about, and I don't know if your amendment addresses it, and I did talk with one individual about, in fact, I think that you were trying to still require reporting for an initial report for the jobs that would be created and so on, under 25,000, right? Down to 25,000, is that correct? Between 25,000 and 200. I guess the part that continues to bother me is, and the thing that really reinforced this or just made it a bigger concern is when we heard about the real failure in terms of Job Z to have accountability of jobs created and all a whole bunch of, you know, really reported by corporations that Job Z was not put, what did about us that they were doing a very good job. So this was in place to deal with, you know, public subsidies to our corporations, and sometimes it's all out, you know, it's a grant or it can be some other things. The thing that bothers me is that we ask them to tell us up front what they're going to do, but if this goes on the way it is now, they never have to tell us if they did even step one of actually creating a job, or, you know, they only talk about the goals, which is important. They talk about the purpose of the public hearing was to say what the public value was. And I think my understanding is now that they will never have to come back and say anything to tell us what they did do below that $200,000. So I'm just continue to be concerned about that, Mr. Chairman, and I, unless you have addressed that in some way that maybe the amendment doesn't. Can you tell me?
Yes, John. Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And the 2A1 amendment, Representative Clark, was drafted and adopted to address your concerns. And frankly, the state doesn't do any follow-up under $500,000 under present law. So, we're asking local units of government to be at a higher standard than the instances than the state itself. And so, as I said earlier, this is just raising the threshold to a more, what I feel is a more appropriate limit. And through my experience, I mean, we lowered, even though we raised the numbers, we've reinstituted via the amendment and the other language in the bill the reporting, most of the reporting requirements. So I don't think that I can satisfy Representative Clark in its entirety with this bill. And so, Mr. Chairman, I'm going to stand pat with the bill. I think it's a good good way to proceed.
Okay, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Clark.
You might be able to satisfy me. You didn't address the one part that I would like to be satisfied on. I'll wait till you're ready.
I'm sorry. I didn't hear that question.
We didn't really have a conversation about whether or not I was, satisfied with any of this. Basically, through the lobbyists who were working on this. So, and I appreciated that. She did a good job.
But the one thing I did hope that you brought back to you was that there is no follow-up accountability. It's the same kind of thing that we saw with Job Z. You can make all kinds of promises, but what's the delivery?
Well,
and if there's no reporting back, which there is now, you report back in a year and you say, have you met your goals or how far did you get towards your goals and so on. So I think what's here is fine. That's good, and I do believe that was a step towards, you know, the kind of concern I had. But I just continue to be concerned about that kind of accountability, and I don't think it's unreasonable. I'm not asking for something that you couldn't satisfy. I'm just asking for, you know, some sort of accountability back of reporting. Yes, we did create that. Yes, we did pay this wage. That's all.
Okay, any further discussion? Oh, Representative Grapple.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Chairman and Representative Dill, I respect the fact that the amendment was offered to get the bill in the form that you requested. And I didn't mention it before, but I guess before we vote on this, I want people to understand that because the report required for financial assistance under paragraph B must include, and then there's specific points listed. And then line 2.10 says, any other information the commissioner may request. And that seems, and I don't know how we can get any more open-ended than that. And I'm wondering if you have any concerns about that, or if this is something you're looking to address in the future. And again, I take the language as face value. Any other information the commissioner may request, it would seem there might be some competitiveness issues there, or some, and do you have any comments on that?
No, Mr. Chairman. The major part of the competitive issue is usually at a local setting. And I suppose the commissioner could ask some questions that ultimately would be some kind of public data that would at some point be shared. But I don't have a great concern about that.
Okay, Representative Tolbert renews his motion. Where House File 3602, that's House File 3602, be recommended to pass as amended and re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? No.
No.
Motion carried. We're now going to take the bill by Representative Walker, House File 615. Representative Walker. And Representative Greiling, would you make a motion dealing with the division report? Okay, Representative Greiling moves the K-12 Education Finance Division report for House File 615, the first committee in Grossman. Did this bill, or Representative Greiling, go through Representative Murphy, committee, it actually should be Representative Murphy's division report. In fact, it went from yours to Representative Murphy's, correct?
Mr. Chair, everything that goes through our committee pretty much goes there, but this one, I wish Representative Mariani were here as well, because...
Okay, just to have the correct motion before us is what I'm talking about. Representative Walker, did this go through Mary Murphy's division before it came here, or it's been around a while, so maybe...
Mr. Chair, from my understanding, I think Representative Murphy just pushed it through that I didn't have a hearing in her committee. I think she referred it back here.
Okay, so, okay, then that would be the Greiling motion, then on the committee report came out of Greiling's K-12 division. So any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I move the House File 615 First Committee in Grossman be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
I was talking to Representative Conner. You said...
I was moving the bill officially.
Okay, the Representative Walker moves the bill. House File 615, that it be recommended to pass and re-refer to the Committee on Ways and Means. Okay, the motion is before us. Be fair to explain the bill, Representative.
Yes, Mr. Chair. It's so nice to have so many more members back in the room. Those of us are feeling kind of lonely while you were absent. I'm so glad that we got so much excited around this wonderful bill. This is not a new concept to members. This is a concept that has been around for 9 years. I've had the opportunity to offer this bill for 8 years. We actually did get this passed through committee last year through the education omnibus bill, and at the last minute it was taken out because of negotiations in conference committee. This bill does a few different things. It offers an opportunity to upgrade the baseline of standards that we currently have in statutes that we're giving into education to children in 7th to 12th grade currently in the statewide public school system. Right now, all the kids have to really be taught is the baseline of STD. Hopefully members have seen the recent information about 1 in 4 STDs being reported by our young people, which unfortunately is a tragedy. This is a bill that does not just focus on sex education, even though a lot of individuals like to focus on that. The part of the bill that I love the most is the healthy relationship and development, working with parents, teaching young people how to, those that are not comfortable going back home and communicating with their parents on what's going on in their lives, how to talk to other young people, having an opportunity to have local communities come together to come up with a curriculum based on the baseline itself. Mr. Chair, I do have a couple of amendments because I'm sure we'll get to some questions.
Okay, I have one here, two by you.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay, which?
I'd like to move the A-17 amendment, Mr. Chair.
The A-17 amendment. Okay, Representative Walker moves the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Walker. Chair. This is to appropriate the money that's needed for the bill.
Okay, and it would provide $114,000. So the amendment is before us. Any discussion? You should have received, I think this one was in the packet. Was it not? Yeah, it was. It's the A-17 that should have been in the packet. Representative Rappel.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman and Representative Walker, $114,000 is appropriated in the fiscal year amount from the general fund of the Commissioner of Education. This program has a base appropriation of $104 in fiscal year 10. This wasn't in the K-12 bill, was it? This appropriation?
Mr. Chair and Representative Garofalo, we have to use either Representative Solberg or Representative Greiland for that.
Well, Mr. Chair,
Representative Solberg, he took action in ways and means to.
Within the Ways and Means budget, on the bottom line is about, I think for other bills, I can remember exactly what it is now. We took $119,000, put it in A. I think it's about 1.2 less, and so this would be in the other bills category.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Well, it's covered. So,
it's covered.
Any further discussion on the appropriation, Representative Anderson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. President Walker, does that mean then that this is an ongoing provision for 2010, ongoing for infinitum, $104,000? That's the way I read it.
Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson, that's the fiscal note that we got from the department. The appropriation itself would give technical ability to the department so that they can hire staff that can answer questions that different school districts may have as it relates to developing the curriculum, maintaining the curriculum, and anything else that they would need.
So, Mr. Chair, Representative Walker, thank you, Mr. Chair. We're expanding the program then by allowing more staff to be hired and more people to be involved with the issue.
Mr. Chair, thank you, and Representative Anderson. If you look at it as an expansion, I look at it as a creation and making sure that we're moving the baseline up and giving more information to young people. The department, as you know, we have no control over how they see, how they want to move their staff around and the work that they intend their staff members to take. They often come whenever we add an appropriation or wanting to do, have the department work on something, they want an additional staff. And so to make sure that we uphold the fiscal note, we are moving the $114,000 and $104,000 ongoing.
So, Mr. Chair,
Representative Anderson,
Representative Walker, the
Department of Education is okay with this amendment the way it stands? Did they testify to it in committee when you had it in the Education Committee?
Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson, the Department of Education have not testified. They did not testify when we did not appropriate the money, and now they have the money, so I would assume, while they may be still neutral because this was not in the governor's recommendation, that they would be most pleased that we're not giving them an unfunded mandate.
So, Mr. Chair,
Representative Anderson,
and Representative Walker, is the Department of Education, they haven't commented on this particular amendment. What about the bill as a whole of File 615? Have they commented on that?
Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson, the only conversations this year that I've had, I have not had any conversations with the department this year, should I say, and actually not even with the administration. I do know that administration had difficulties with the bill and the concept last year, but the department itself has not come through one way or the other.
And Mr. Chair, Representative Walker, you not spoken with the governor since this was taken out of the bill last year either?
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, I am hopeful for negotiations and moving forward.
God bless you. Representative on the amendment, this was an amendment to actually put the bill in the shape that the author would like to present it, Representative Seifert.
Mr. Chair, it is relating the amendment because of the cost issue. I was looking at the bill and it said that a school district must offer, on page 2, the curriculum, and I'm wondering, do we know of any schools that are not offering something, and are we imposing an unfunded mandate? Because if Representative Solberg has some walking around money the way it sounds, shouldn't we give some money to the schools if they are being required to do something that some may not be doing right now? I mean, it's fine to give the bureaucracy money, the Department of Education. What about our local schools, though? Could I find out if that's a mandate or if there will be a cost incurred on the school district?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Seifert. You know, the school district, the school board association has not been in contact with me personally. I have not heard of any objections. I'm assuming that they would have some concerns looking at this as an unfunded mandate. You know, one of the things I'd be interested in, what type of funding, and you probably were here when we did the STD baseline, what type of funding you appropriated to school districts to make sure that the STD baseline curriculum was developed. And so we do have, unfortunately, a curriculum that is already being done in our school district. This is just an expansion of that. And so as it relates to the unfunded mandate, Representative Seifert, you'd have to talk to the association in your school district.
Mr. Chair, is there someone here from the school district to let us know if this is an unfunded mandate, or is it just, I don't know, are there schools that aren't doing sex ed right now? I don't even know. Public schools, I guess, the ones that we regulate, but maybe it's just we're just replicating over and telling them to do stuff they're already doing. I honestly don't know the answer.
Mr. Chair, and Representative Seifert, while I'm not sure which school districts are only doing a particular, if they're all doing sex ed or not doing sex ed, I can tell you the way that the bill is constructed, not all school districts across the state of Minnesota is doing what we're asking them to do if this bill passes into law.
Okay, all those in favor of
Mr. Chair.
Amendment? Representative Seifert.
Mr. Chair, there's a local fiscal note apparently that was attached that's on page 3 of 3. District school board / administration / staff would require training at an estimated cost of $150 per person. School districts would have to absorb these costs. So I don't know how much that is statewide, but perhaps we could craft an amendment to give the rest of whatever Representative Solberg has left under the couch to the schools. I know we're going to hear about it. You passed another unfunded mandate on us, and one reason the PE standards have been hung up is the same difference.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Spice, for the members. What I would prefer is not to do an amendment today, not do something half-cocked, but I will have a conversation with Representative Solberg, and it'll be an opportunity, if I can get this bill passed today, going into Ways and Means and having a conversation with the School Board Association, but to do something without looking at what we're exactly trying to do and what that consequences, good or bad, may do. I'm not comfortable of doing that today.
Okay, any further discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Carried. Division has been requested. All those in favor of the amendment, please raise your right hand. Okay, being 18 ayes and 6 noes, the amendment is adopted. Representative Walker, you have another amendment here.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move the A-16 amendment.
Okay, the amendment has been moved. Discussion on the amendment. Representative Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is an amendment after members have had an opportunity to talk to Representative McFarland and her history on the school board, and the school district, from my understanding, is not my area of expertise. Worked on a 3-year cycle of review of the curriculum and wanted to make sure that they had an opportunity instead of just doing it as a set year, but putting it in when they have the review in their process. And so, members, that's what this amendment does.
Okay, any discussion on this amendment? The A-16. Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion is carried. There is another amendment, but they're not by the authors, so would you like to explain the bill before we take the other amendment?
Mr. Chair, you want me to go into more detail? I did an overview.
Okay, you're done with your overview, then we'll take the Representative Kahn has an amendment. That's the A-15. Representative Kahn? Representative Kahn moves the A-15 amendment. Representative Kahn.
Mr. Chairman, I have discussed this amendment with the author. This amendment just adds it's kind of a minor amendment of information. In fact, I have two handouts on this, if I can have you hand it out.
Yeah, page right behind you. This.
This again continues along the problem of the sexually transmitted diseases and the one in four, and this is information on immunizations that should be included in the preteen vaccination schedule. They are not mandated, and this language does not mandate them. We've had a very good study from the Department of Health on the issue of human papillomavirus, which is the one. If control of this virus would give us, for the very first time since President Nixon, I believe it was, declared a war on cancer, this vaccine gives us the possibility of controlling the one form of cancer which could be eliminated, and that's cervical cancer in women. This has been extensively worked through with the Department of Health and the Department of Education. It's very small. If you read through, it latches on to information that's already been given out. It shows on if information is given out. The kind of information which you're getting shows that it specifically maintains that those two vaccines are desirable but not mandatory. So I guess I'd like support of the amendment. And there's been a lot of discussion about what the cost is following up Representative Seifert's concerns about unfunded mandates to anybody. And if you read the last two lines from 119 to 124, it says that the Department of Education, cooperating with the Department of Health, shall do it in the manner the department deems to be the most cost-effective and programmatically effective, and gives, at the very least, posting the information on the department's website. So as a mandate, this is a pretty wimpy mandate, but we think it will have some beneficial effects anyway.
Any discussion on the
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Kahn, I'm just wondering if there has been, I know this has just come out recently and the FDA does extensive testing on this, but they all do it, also do extensive testing on what is the when we send our troops over there, we usually vaccinate them for, what's the cow disease that usually hits them? No, it's they get vaccinated for a particular agent that they use in chemical warfare over there. I have to go to the top of my head right now. But the problem is, sometimes the cure is worse than the sickness. And I'm just curious as to whether or not this vaccine has had its duration of testing to ensure that we're not vaccinating our kids only to find out that 20 years later they're sterile or something.
Well, if you read the report from the Department of Health is about this thick, and it is in that, and there has been really extensive testing. There have been some people who have said that it's not enough, and it's never enough. I think the most important things with these drugs that are given is not so much the pre-testing before it's approved, but the follow-up in terms of watching all of the possible incidents. But one of the things, this has gone through the extra FDA, this has been approved for the Vaccine for Children program. So it actually has a stronger, has a stronger testing regime than even the ones that are required for adults. So it's been approved for three federal programs, the general FDA approval, the Vaccine for Children's approval, and what's called the 317 vaccination program, which supplies this kind of interim area where it doesn't cover children. Every insurance, one of the things that we've looked at, what other states, that some other states have done, is mandated insurance companies to pay for it. And so I looked to see if we needed to do this, and it turns out every single insurance plan in the state has already agreed to pay for it. So there isn't. So all of the pieces that fall into place have really fallen into place for this. So, and again, we're not mandating, we're not mandating the vaccine, we're just asking for information about the availability to go out, which is particularly important for people who aren't covered with insurance and need to know about the Vaccine for Children's program and the 317, what's called the 317 program.
Just one follow-up, Mr. Chair, and Representative Kahn, just, I haven't done all the research on this one, so I'm looking at you for some guidance here, but is cervical cancer in this HPV, is this a STD category?
Yes.
So it's only generated through sexually transmitted interaction?
Yes.
Okay.
Meningococcal, the vaccine has, as we know from some of the stories that we've heard about it, that has wider transmission. But it's,
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Representative Kahn, we've had some conversations about this, and I appreciate that you did ensure that when people are getting the information about the HPV vaccine, that they also have to be informed about the potential risks of immunization. And I just want to say a couple of things on the record here, which is there's a lot we don't know about the testing. And Representative Kahn, do you know, for example, how many young girls were in the clinical trials?
No, I don't. But
you don't, and neither does the public. The FDA and the drug company Merck have never revealed that, so we don't know. And I do want to say that age 9 to 15 is the start of this. But these are girls, but there's studies going on right now, so just for any of you might be concerned, this will also be something that will be available and I believe pushed with some really slick ads for young boys as well, because as we know, girls are only 50% of the problem. The reservoir of the virus is both, both sexes. So I think those tests are going on right now for young boys, and we're talking about kids starting at age 9. So I just have some questions, because I have looked at this. I really do care about this kind of cancer. I think it's really an important cancer to try to get our hands around. It's pushed with such slick and beautiful advertising, it really makes me uncomfortable. And as I've looked into the clinical trials, I think there's questions that we should just all ask. I'm going to support your legislation because I think it does go the direction of saying that we should look at both the benefits and the potential risks. But I just want to say that I think we should be cautious when there is this kind of immunization. At first, when first the drug company wanted to make it mandatory, and they did actually in Texas for a period of time until I think the governor of Texas made it mandatory by executive order, and then I think the legislature overturned his position, or somehow it got rescinded, so it was voluntary. And I know that this is not what's in Minnesota's situation right now, although that was, I think, in the original bill that it was going to be mandatory last year, and not this one. So I just want to have caution about this. I think from what I've looked at, there's just some questions to be raised. And I know it does not vaccinate our young girls against all of the viruses causing HPV. I think it's just like 3 or 4 that are the most potentially
90%, I think it's something.
Yeah. So, Mr. Chairman, I just want to put that on the record that there's some questions, and I really hope we can get some more information. Our health department can get more information about the clinical trials and whether or not this should be advised.
Okay, any further discussion on the con amendment? Seeing none then, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carried. That's the end of the meeting. Okay, we have the bill before us, so
I don't know who wants it.
Any further discussion on the bill?
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, I'm just wondering if there's someone from the School Boards Association. We hear regularly about more mandates and no money. Does anyone want to say something, or are we just acknowledging, should we just start trucking out PE mandates and all sorts of other mandates, and they're just willing to swallow them without any money? It's okay to give the department all sorts of money, but nothing for the schools.
I think there's somebody coming forward to answer your question.
No.
And if you could identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Representative Carlson and members. My name is Grace Schwab, and I represent the Minnesota School Boards Association. And we generally on standards are rather quiet since that's a legislative decision. What does worry us, though, is a fiscal note that carries the $150 per pupil cost. Now, I'm amazed at that cost because it's so...
Per employee, rather. Employee.
Per employee.
Yeah.
That would be peaking in the program, as right. I understand it. So
for
that's you may have one person in a site, or maybe a larger building, maybe
a couple.
I assume it would be whatever potentially number of health teachers that you might have, or people that would be teaching that part of the curriculum, but.
Representative Carlson, the other thing I want to share with the committee is we don't send information home about immunization to families. There is some liability concern that if the ones we require for school, we don't even send immunization for. And I think there's got to be a really good connection between school districts and the Department of Health, or someone who will maintain that information in a very medically verifiable manner. So that's not the responsibility then of the public schools. We were afraid if you just sent one piece of information home on an immunization, parents might somehow think that was the one they should take their children to have. So we were hopeful you would work these out in committee as you went forward.
Okay, Representative Greiling?
I'm sorry, I had a follow-up.
You want to follow up?
It's not with the school board, but for the author. Representative Walker, what school district right now is implementing this? I'm assuming there is one out of the 300 to 400 school districts we have. There is some school that is doing this right now. Which one would you say best characterizes the ideal, Minneapolis or Duluth, or is there one that you would say is really implementing exactly what you're looking for? That's a model, if you will?
Grab Tim Walker.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Pfeiffer, we were both sitting here as it relates to the responsible sex education pieces. You could use a Minneapolis or St. Paul or Duluth. However, getting into more of the comprehensive relationship parts of it, the bill, and the healthy relationship development, not so much.
Mr. Chair, I'm looking at, I've heard anecdotally that, this is supposed to be modeled after a lot of what Minneapolis is doing, but doesn't Minneapolis have the worst rates in the state of teen pregnancies and STDs compared to any other district, so why would we want the other school district to model something that isn't clearly, that is clearly is not working as based by every data that we've all seen? It almost goes opposite of the direction where in some of our school districts out west, where people might say, well, you're not as comprehensive, quote unquote, as Minneapolis, we don't have the rates that they have in Minneapolis. So what, it doesn't make a lot of sense that we're trying to take the curriculum that isn't working and put it on the schools where they don't have the problems as much. It doesn't make a lot of sense.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Representative Seifert. I have never said that this is modeled after my school district. While there are challenges within Minneapolis as it relates to some of its students, the concentration that you're talking about is actually in Karen. Representative Clark, my district, her district, and Representative Dominguez and Mullery's district as it relates to the rates that you're talking about. Actually, if you take out our district, our rates would be added up to about the same as the rest of the state of Minnesota. Close to it. It's just the concentrations of difficulties in particular areas where there is poverty concentration and having more difficulties in every other area because of some of the cuts that are going on in the state. However, that being said, Minneapolis is not unlike any other part of the state. If you take out Minneapolis, your kids are still reporting having sexual activity. They're reporting STD and STI rates. They're reporting difficulties with abusive relationships. They're reporting difficulties in not being able to come and talk to their parents, having difficulties getting over their ex-boyfriend. This is not something that is based on Minneapolis. This is something that, unfortunately, whether we want to deal with it or not, our kids who are in adolescent state are having difficulties, and this is one of the solutions that I'm offering this committee. And so, committee, I look forward to your vote.
Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mitchell, you said the School Board Association does not have a policy on sex education.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Grayling, that is correct.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Grayling.
Thank you, Ms. Schwab. And then you started to say that the School Board Association would be opposed to an unfunded mandate of $150 per student. But now that it's per health teacher, I'm wondering if you could comment, if you have any position. I know that I have had bills, for instance, a bullying policy, or no, it was some sort of harassment policy before you were in the lobbyist position, and the school board association, and that was where they actually had to develop the policy, and the school board association was one of my chief supporters, and I'm sure that cost more than $150 per district. So now that it's only $150 per teacher rather than per student, as you were starting to say, I'm guessing then the School Board Association is not going to put the small cost in the category of being opposed to this important bill on the basis of it being an unfunded mandate.
Ms. Schwab?
Representative Browning, thank you for the softball. It really does help in the end. The school districts are always concerned about embedding new curriculum and the costs that are locally done there, but you are correct. This is really done on a local standard now at your local school district. So you folks probably know better than anyone else what your districts look like. This would bring a statewide standard so they would all be the same, and I would think we would just not weigh in and leave that heavy decision to you. Thank you, Representative Brown.
Thank you very much.
Okay, Representative Holder.
Mr. Chair and Ms. Schwab, with the amendment, the A16 amendment that was adopted, I think it says consistent with curriculum review cycles. I don't know what under 120B, the point 11 is, but it says, or the start of the 2011-12 school year, whichever comes first, the school district must offer the independently established policies and so forth. So it seems to me that this is something that is being required already, and this, as the curriculum is reviewed, then this would become part of that review. When the curriculum is reviewed, my question is, do the school districts then pay or have a cost to train their teachers or require their teachers to be trained under the new curriculum that's established by the school district.
Ms. Schwab.
Representative Carlson, Representative Silver, thank you again for that softball.
No, that isn't a softball. I'm asking a question.
We use
I don't know the answer to it.
The 2% set aside we received for school district for staff development. And as this curriculum would change, we would train our teachers in the new curriculum, whether it be sexual education or science, math, reading. We update that curriculum on a 3-year cycle.
So, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Schwab, then, could it be said that we are already funding this particular training, this $151 per trainer that we need to have? So would that be a fair assessment or not?
Ms. Schwab.
Representative Carlson, Representative Goldberg. It is presently a locally adopted mandate, and as Representative Seifert pointed out, I believe there are some districts in the state that choose not to implement this or a very limited scope program. So it might be a change for some places.
Mr. Chairman, Ms. Schwab, I'm asking though, with the 2% and the staff development that's in there and with the language that was adopted by Representative Walker, are we now already solving that problem?
Ms. Schwab?
Representative Carlson, Representative Silberg answers yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've got a few questions here. One, to Representative Silver's point, I think, we can say that would be covered under the 2% content education, but it is an unfunded mandate. That's what we're doing here at the state. We're saying we're going to take the local control away from the school who may not want to teach this, and we're mandating it in this bill. To me, that's an unfunded mandate. I have a question for the author. Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Chair. In your bill, you say absent, and I'm wondering if you can tell me how many schools around the state teach abstinence only.
Mr. Chair and Representative Stevenson, I can get that back to you. I did not bring my large folder. Did not know we'd be asking certain questions like that.
Okay. To that point, Mr. Chair, I have a flyer that I think all of the members got from the University of Minnesota study. Basically, as I look through this thing, and, you know, we in the political sector often, when we look through these surveys, find that there are very few things that you can reach even a 70% consensus on. So when you come up with a 90% consensus on the majority of these issues, I took exception to how this thing was put together. So I called up University of Minnesota, asked them to fax me a copy of the survey. And as I went through that survey, it was not difficult to understand why they came up with these numbers because of the way this thing was worded. One of the questions was, do you believe that abstinence-only education is an effective means of sex education? Well, how many schools teach abstinence-only? How many teach both? None of that was covered in this criteria. The survey, in my estimation, was loaded. And it was loaded to a particular end. And so that is one of the first beefs I've got with this process. The other would be that in this, you know, this teaching of abstinence and the sex education, if we take a look at the trend and how our schools have been doing in the last couple decades, we're seeing a continually escalating amount of STDs and promiscuity at the high school level. And I just like to relate my situation. When I just got into the legislature, I had some parents come to me in a local school saying that their student, their son, was being aggressively taught sex education in the school. They had gone to the school, requested to be opted out, or actually at this point they requested to see the curriculum. They were denied the ability to see the curriculum. And what was happening in this particular class was they were staggering the kids, boys and girls, every other boy and girl. Then they were watching movies of boys coming out of showers and doing a testicular exam. And the same thing with women doing a breast exam. Now, if that doesn't create some uncomfortable situations in the classroom, I'm not sure what does. When the parents objected to that, they were told, you're the only one who's complaining here. And so we're not really going to address that issue. That came to me. I went to the superintendent, and we had long discussions on bringing this thing before the school board. And that said, going to this portion of the bill, which is on line 2.8. It says, the school district must consult with parents or guardians of enrolled students when establishing policies, procedures, curriculum, and services under this subdivision. And my question, Mr. Chair, is could the author of the bill tell me what consult means?
Mr. Chair, thank you, Representative Severson. Before I answer your question, I will say I feel bad for your student, because as a parent, if I wanted my child to opt out, that would be important to me, and that's why it's in the bill. Under this bill, if this bill becomes law, that parent would not have that difficulty in having to go to the school board. It would be mandated that any child, any parent that did not want their child to participate in the curriculum would have the right not to have their child there, and a different curriculum that they approved of would be available for the student. Also, as it relates to the curriculum being developed, it would be developed and consult is whoever wants to participate in a curriculum process. Just like we've had different community members weigh in on the different standards over the years, there's an opportunity for the school board, the district that is looking at the curriculum in a particular area, to have conversations. The intent of the author is to make sure that not only parents, but other community members that have a vested interest in wanting to be involved, have an opportunity to voice their opinions on what type of curriculum on the baseline that needs to be taught. There are different types of curriculums that are out there. One suit is not going to fit all school districts in the state of Minnesota. However, the baseline, I do believe, does.
And Mr. Chair, just a response. And in this particular case, and I appreciate the going over the consult part and getting the parents engaged. I appreciate that intent. In fact, when this parent that was engaged in this process had requested to be put on the curriculum review, she was basically told that we review that curriculum once every 3 years. It's not up for review for another 2 years. Her son was out of the process by then. I guess my point being in this whole process is we are mandating onto the schools some things that need to be at the local control level. And in the sense of uniformity, I really believe that the parents and the teachers, the local teachers, school boards, have the greatest influence, the greatest input, and should have the greatest amount of power without us infringing upon their mandates that we are basically putting in this particular bill. And for that reason, I will be voting against that.
Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a couple points. And Representative Stevenson, I respect that. You know, many of my constituents have the same belief and the same argument that when we pass the standards, especially in social studies and science, and feeling that our school district should have more input. We just have to have an ability to disagree. As it relates to the review process, and that's why the amendment is on there, making sure that individuals that do want to weigh in would not be rushed through it. It would go through the next review process. And so if your review process is not up until for 3 years, your school district would not be starting this curriculum until then. As it relates to the abstinence only based, your information, we can argue again, and we're going to side differently. You know, some of the data that I've shown as it relates to more school districts moving to an abstinence only based curriculum, the STDs have gone up, and those numbers have gone up consistently. They were going down prior to that, so we will not agree on that, and that's fine. As it relates to Dr. Resnick, and he was here, unfortunately, this is a chatty committee, and he did have other obligations that he did have to get to, because I figured you would have those issues that was raised, Representative Severson. You know, we all can, whether it is partisan survey data that we put out, whether it is something that the Grocery Association puts out, or one of the unions, there's always going to be someone having some questions as it relates to that information. My mother was big on statistics as a minor in statistics and said, don't trust any numbers. However, I do believe that we can't decide which areas of the University of Minnesota research to decide to hold stock in. I do believe that if this was an independent individual or a individual that's supporting the bill, I would have more concerns as it relates to it being authentic. However, I do respect the survey and the author of the survey and the report that has come out, especially since it has come from the University of Minnesota, Twin Cities.
Okay, Representative Walker renews her motion that House File 615, the first committee engrossment, be recommended to pass. as amended and re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Any further discussion? Seeing none then, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion carried. Representative Walker?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I woke up in a very, very bad mood this morning. That my L.A. keeps saying having a sunny disposition. The sun is out. I haven't seen the sun yet, so my mood is slowly lagging. And so hopefully, Representative Solberg, by the time I have an opportunity to come to your committee, I'll be in a better sunny disposition.
Oh, I'm sure you will. And you'll be smiling, Mr. Chair, when you get to the House floor. It'll be kind of a smile from your ear.
Okay, the... President Tamar, I think you're next. We passed over you while you're working on the amendments, and I think we now have the amendments correct. Representative Tamar moves the Public Safety Finance Division report for House File 2996, the First Committee in Grossman. Any discussion on the Tamar motion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carried.
Tamar.
Representative Tamar, would you care to move the bill?
I would move House File 2996, First Committee Engrossment, be recommended to pass and place on the General Register.
The motion is before us. Representative Tamar, we have fairly lengthy amendments.
There are three amendments.
Did you want to take the A7 first? Or?
I don't have a copy of it, but that's fine.
It's being passed out. So okay. Well, instead, if we take another amendment to A6, it might work.
The A6 amendment, do you want me to describe it? Or
We should move it first.
I would move the A6 amendment.
Okay, the... amendment is before us, Representative Tamar.
The A6 amendment, as when I describe the bill, this will become a little bit clearer, but basically what's left of a fairly lengthy bill is all that's left is really a task force that will be looking at drug offenses. And this simply adds community members to that task force and the appointing process for the task force.
Any discussion on the amendment?
Which one are we?
This is the eighth. I should say working group, but not task force.
We don't have it.
Adds four community members.
Four community members.
Okay, any further discussion on the amendment?
We don't have it.
The A6 amendment?
No, we do not have it.
I guess that's being passed out
it's
as
coming
well.
Coming yet. Okay. Hang on a minute. Mr. Chair, while it's being passed out, I would just point out, I'm sure Representative Pawlowski would anyway, that again, it's a task force, working group, whatever. Your motion was to go to the floor. Again, not wanting you to get in trouble, either needs to go to Pawlowski's committee or to rules by our internal movement of bills for any of that type of thing, or it can be re-referred back on the floor legitimately. Just so you know when you're making your final motion while we were waiting to pass out.
Well, he may be, is this an essential part of the bill at this point? Because it does give you an additional step. You may not mind that. It will have to go to rules from here.
That's fine with me.
You don't mind going to rules?
No.
Okay, so that the amendment at the appropriate time then will change it because we're beyond the deadline. So. Okay, any further discussion? Everybody have a copy of the amendment? Understand what it is? Seeing none, then all those in favor?
One thing. With the appointment of citizens to the community members, is there an expectation that they would qualify for a per diem expenses? So we volunteer.
Mr. Sheriff and Solberg, there is not an expectation that they would qualify for per diem.
Very good, thank you.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. I have other amendments here with...
they're all mine, Mr.
Chair. Yeah, your name is on them, but I want to check and see which ones have been... Have they all been distributed now? We think they have been. So do you want to start with A7? That was the first one I had then. That's the... amendment that's, I think, 3 pages, 4 pages?
Yes.
5 pages.
Mr. Chair, I would move the A7 amendment.
Okay, the motion is before us. Representative Tamar?
The committee's actually already heard a variation of this amendment. This was offered by Representative Murphy a while back. It was just brought to us by the counties. It essentially allows a sex offender who was in a county facility, a sex offender who was in a DOC facility to stay in that facility until the commitment petition has been satisfied. This is a way to save money by keeping them in a Department of Corrections facility, and we've already, and that's the amendment.
Any discussion on the amendment?
Mr. Carlson is here, if you have any specific questions.
Mr. We've heard this before, but just a question. Is it the person who that is confined to make gets to make that election, or is it the commissioner of...
I'll let Mr. Carlson...
specifically, my
question. The person has to agree to it, but...
Mr. Chairman, Representative Solberg, if I understood your question correctly, I apologize if I'm a little bit too lengthy. The offender is the one who is making the election to stay at the DOC facility, or in the alternative that the county offers, at a county facility. Once that individual makes that election to stay at a DOC facility, there is an out for the Commissioner of Corrections if that individual proves unamenable to staying in that facility, where they can ask to have that individual removed from that facility and sent down to St. Peter or Moose Lake.
Okay, very good.
In that situation.
Thank you. Any further discussion?
Are we on the amendment, Mr. Chair?
Yeah, we're on the amendment A7.
Oh, A7. Did we do A6?
Yep.
I'm sorry. I just step out for a second.
I didn't use it for task force, the working group for.
I was going to address on 1.10 on that amendment that I always prefer to have it say rural instead of outstate. I always think it sounds like we live outside of the state, and that used to be kind of a bipartisan no-no for about 12 years now to try to do rural or greater Minnesota or whatever. But if we're past it, that's okay.
I'll change this later.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, any further discussion on the A7 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, motion carries. Now I have the A5 by Representative Seymour.
I would move the A5 amendment.
Okay, motion is before us, Representative Tamar.
The A5 amendment is to trying to deal with people from the military who are coming back from Afghanistan and Iraq who are suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder and other mental health problems. And it simply provides some guidance to the court that when they are doing pre-sentence investigation after a crime has been committed, that that the court would refer the offender to get assistance from the Veterans Affairs and any kinds of help that they can provide. There was quite an extensive study that was conducted, and I think this will help a lot of our service people who are suffering from mental health problems.
Okay, any discussion then on the motion by Representative Tamar to adopt the A5 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion carried. Representative Tamar, A4.
I think that's the end of the amendment that I had.
I've got one here that says A4 on it. This is for community members. We dealt with that one then. I somehow got two in the file here. Okay. Representative Tamar, then on the bill, any...
The bill, Mr. Chair, is really a very watered-down version of what was a fairly exhaustive amount of work that Representative Eastland, myself, convened a working group over the interim to try to deal with the issue of inmate recidivism and how to best reintegrate offenders when they are released from prison into society. Unfortunately, when the fiscal note came out, it made the bill impossible to move forward with. So we stripped out pretty much all of that, all of the language in the bill, and this is what's left of it, is the working group on controlled substances. Just a real quick background, the Sentencing Guidelines Commission in 07 had made some possible recommendations to the legislature on re-ranking of drug offenses. They were looking at re-ranking drug offenses, and the County Attorney's Association, the Governor's Office, had some problems with what they were doing. So they decided to not move forward with those re-ranking, and instead they feel that this new task, this new working group, looking at a number of different issues is a better way to look at our full sentencing guidelines on drug offenses. So basically what we're doing with this working group is looking at thresholds, looking at the sentencing guideline grids. We're asking the working group to look at aggravating factors for more dangerous offenders, particularly the kingpins, early release programs, departure from presumptive guidelines, the impact of the recent U.S. Supreme Court criminal sentencing decisions, and that had to do with the different sentences for crack and cocaine, the efficacy of treatment programs, do they work or not. So a whole host of things, everything from how the court to how probation officers deal with drug offenses. And this, they are going to study this and make a report back to the legislature. The legislature would have to decide what, if anything, that they would recommend in terms of new statutes. The Sentencing Guidelines Commission will staff this. The working group membership came from the Department of Corrections, and that's basically it.
Okay, any discussion on the bill? Well, seeing none, then Representative Tamar renews his motion that House File 2996, the First Committee of Grossman, as amended, be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Rules and Legislative Administration. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carried. I'm going to ask Representative Taylor to take the chair for a while, and we'll take, I think, next the two Hanson bills. Representative Dietrich is not here yet.
Senator Houdini, would you like to move the citizen report?
Yes, I will move the Environment and Natural Resources Finance Division report for House File 3625, First Committee in Grossman.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carried.
Madam Chair.
Representative Virginia, could you move the bill, please?
Yes. I move House File 3625, First Committee in Grossman, be recommended to pass and placed on the General Register.
Madam Chair, before we get, may I make an observation on that motion?
Representative Pelosi.
Madam Chair, on page 5 of the bill, there is a section 5 that deals with the rulemaking exemption. In order for Representative Roginius' motion to stand, I would like to offer an amendment. And on page 5, line 5.34,
The on line 5.34, the sentence that continues on the next page says the plan is exempt from rulemaking procedures. I would move to delete that sentence so that indeed Representative Lemius's motion would stand and we would not have to send this to rules or back to GovOp or whatever morass of committees would then have to deal with. So I'd make that motion.
Representative Hansen.
I'm in support of that. I've talked with Representative Pawlowski and Representative Wagenius about this as a move through the process. We thought we had done that, and we did not, and so I would be supportive of that oral amendment.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. All in favor of the oral amendment by Representative Pawlowski, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. Representative Hansen, if you would describe the bill for us, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, 3625 contains two bills that are DNR initiatives. The first is a facilities management account. It's fairly straightforward. A short bill goes through lines, the beginning of bill to 2.7, where there's sales that occur. It allows for that retention of those dollars to help with future remodeling or upgrades to the facility. So in terms of finance, there's not an immediate savings, but over the long term, we and the DNR believe that this should be a way where we can save some dollars by looking at existing site sales, being able to recoup those dollars and use them in the future. The second part is the subsequent pages relating to administrative penalty orders. Last year, we had made some changes to provide the Board of Water and Soil Resources administrative penalty order authority, like the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency had. This year, the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources have come forward with administrative penalty orders. Administrative penalty orders are another method to achieve compliance rather than just the criminal process or the civil process. It's attempting to achieve corrective action, where the regulating agency works with the violation to try to get the action corrected. And we think this is a way where we can help achieve compliance throughout that process. So we've combined those two bills into one bill, and that's 3625.
We have several amendments at this point. Would you like to move the amendments, or shall we take the amendments now, or does anyone have any questions about the bill? Representative Tolbert.
Madam Chair and members, with a passion, I hate administrative fines. And I know they may be effective to correct things, but you know, that's why we have a court system. And I don't know as if there's any way that these administrative fines can then be appealed into the court if I disagree with it. The Attorney General may proceed in half may petition the district court to file these orders. But it seems to me that if a person on page 5, line C, a person fails to pay the penalty, a corrective order, the Attorney General may bring a civil suit. But if I contest the administrative fine to begin with, I haven't read this completely, but it seems to me that, you know, what you are is you got the fine, you're guilty, and then you get the chance to have the Attorney General enforce your guiltiness, whether because the Commissioner said you were guilty.
Representative Hansen.
Madam Chair, Mr. Japser with the DNR can answer that question.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jim Japs. I'm the Assistant Director for the DNR Division of Water. Once an administrative penalty order is issued, there's two options. One, you can comply with the order. The other option is to request an expedited administrative hearing on that order within 30 days. There's also an option in here that would provide for alternative dispute resolution, including mediation.
Well,
Representative Goldberg.
Mr. Chair, in all those cases, the decision has been made. You are guilty, and then you get to prove it yourself that you're not guilty. And including the alternative dispute resolution, I see that's on page 5. But then the enforcement is also for the Attorney General to take you to court to enforce your guilty plea that you were guilty of because the Commissioner said you were guilty.
Madam Chair, Representative Stolberg, if you're not happy with the administrative law judge's decision, the commissioner's order, then you can appeal that to the Minnesota Court of Appeals, just like you could a district court's decision.
But, Mr. Chair,
Representative Stolberg,
I'm familiar with the Court of Appeals, and the Court of Appeals can only rule on the record that's been established by the administrative law judge. I know the administrative law judge is... You're serving as a district court, but it would be nice to have your day in the district court first.
Mr. Jeff.
Madam Chair, Representative Goldberg, in both the district court and the contested case process, they establish your record. So the Court of Appeals would be looking at either the record, and if you're referring that one record's better than the other, I guess that's something for the Attorney General's office maybe to discuss, but I think that it's the record that the Court of Appeals does look at.
Well, Madam Chair,
Representative Pope,
this isn't a Johnny come lately. I've been in here a long time. I fought and lost on the administrative fines that were assessed for the Department of Transportation or Public Safety or whoever does the other things for driver's license violations, everything else. I fought the fight for administrative fines. I mean, if we're going to have administrative fines, then let's do away with the court system and let the executive branch be the court as well. I just don't like them. I never have and never will.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Jeff.
Representative Stolberg. The department hopes never to use this. We hope to have this as an incentive to gain compliance. As you've seen in the fiscal note, we had $2,000 in revenue that would not come to the department, that would go to the general fund. So we were really hoping that this serves more as a carrot than a stick.
Madam Chair.
Representative Silver.
I understand that. So then that's the stick over my head is the fine. So the carrot is I comply, whether or not I think I have made a mistake or not. I mean, it's the department making determination whether I'm right or wrong.
Mr. Jeff.
Madam Chair, Representative Goldberg, the department currently does have several other authorities. We have cease and desist orders, we have restoration orders, we have criminal citations. This is simply a restoration order with a penalty attached. If you comply with the order, the penalty can be forgiven.
Madam Chair. Again, I think the department says that there are already remedies in law for them to do that. And those are judicial remedies.
Madam Chair, Representative Stolberg, this is similar to the ACO authorities at the Department of Health, Pollution Control Agency, Department of Agriculture have, so perhaps we're unique in not having it.
Madam Chair, and that's why I've been against them all. I've lost every one of them.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Jabs, what's the purpose for this bill? Why does the department need this? What instance or what circumstance brought this to the department's attention that you want to put it now into law?
Mr. Jabs.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson. The intent of this bill is really to address egregious and repeat offenders. We're not looking at using this for, the first-time offender. We're looking at, unless it's a real egregious action. So it's simply to address those repeat and egregious actions.
So, Madam Chair.
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Jabs, you must have an example of that, though. Otherwise, you wouldn't bring it forward.
Mr. Jabs.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, there could be a number of examples where someone, they were in a drought situation, restrictions are placed on watering, they cease to water after several notices. This may be one thing that we could use to try to gain compliance.
Madam Chair.
Representative Anderson.
Yes, I'm not afraid.
I guess I'm electric and sober. I don't really like what's being brought forward, so I guess I'll oppose it.
Representative Wagenius.
Yes, I am equally as passionate as Representative Solberg, but for administrative penalty orders, just because we can use them and not make people criminals. Because to get into criminal court, you have to call them a criminal. And it's much better if somebody says something egregious and repeatedly does it, that there's an administrative penalty order rather than saying you are a criminal. So I think that's the distinction. But I actually do have an amendment here. Are you ready for amendment?
I have another question.
Oh, okay.
Representative Seifert.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I kind of agree with Representative Solberg on the administrative penalties. And I think we actually won on one a couple of years ago. Tom Ruccavina moved to delete one, and we killed it. And I think it might have been for DNR. I don't remember. But on page one of the bill, it says money in the special account can be used for acquiring facilities, renovating it for administrative use, or constructing administrative buildings for the DNR. And I'm just, what money and what special fund are we using for this, and what, where did it used to go?
Representative,
Mr. Meyer. Madam Chair, members of the record, Bob Meyer, Commissioner, Department of Natural Resources. Currently, when we sell land, the land goes to the land acquisition account. So if we sell a building site, Representative Seifert, we sell land with a building, the revenues that are associated with that building go into the land acquisition account to allow us to purchase more land for the within the Outdoor Recreation Act. Parks, wildlife management areas, scientific natural areas. What we're trying to do here is to provide a little bit more incentive to the department to relocate and to look at how we're established throughout the state. You see the language establishes in the facilities management account, which we created several years ago, to make sure, to help our divisions understand the costs of actually operating as a business, heat, light, computers, HR, all of these facilities or these management activities go into the account, and then the divisions are charged back. What we're trying to do is when we do relocate a site, actually capture those facilities costs that are associated with the building, to allow us to put them into this account to build more energy efficient buildings, to look at how we're co-locating with our other divisions. We have over 167 sites around the state. Currently many of those are over 40 years old. Windows, heating systems, things of that nature need to be continually upgraded, and we're trying to be more effective and efficient in our locations and also in our operations, how our buildings operate and function. And being able to capture these costs and these buildings in this account will help us do that.
Any further questions?
I don't know. I guess.
In which case, go ahead. We have an amendment. Representative Wagenius, I believe you have the H362583.
I do have an amendment. This was originally a bill that traveled through our committee, brought to us by Representative Doty, and he is not on this committee, so I am moving this on his behalf because the Senate failed to hold a hearing. So I would like to move House File A3, and I think if Representative Doty could come up, he could give you a word or two about it.
Representative Billy.
Madam Chair, thank you. Members, there are four real zoos in Minnesota, and only three of them, by statute, are currently allowed to receive lottery in lieu money. The effect of this amendment would be that all four real zoos in Minnesota would be receiving those funds. The Little Falls Zoo has rapidly developed out of a very small zoo only a few years ago to the point where they are now seeking AZA accreditation. They have actually received mentorship okay now, which means they're on a fast track in probably 2 years or even less to be AZA fully accredited. They had, I believe, 40,000 visitors last year, again, pretty much out of nowhere to a real zoo. And so ask your support to include them in the wording that would allow them to have state funding.
Any discussion? That's that? Yep. Representative Wagenius, then we renew your motion for the A3 amendment. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carried.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members.
We have the A4 amendment, the H3625A4 amendment. I believe that's Representative Hilty. Would you care to move that?
Yes, Madam Chair, I would move adoption of the A4 amendment.
Yep. Would you like to explain the amendment?
Madam Chair, members, this addresses a situation in Cloquet. There is a prospective economic development in the city of Cloquet that would involve the current location of the Northeast Regional Forestry Office that's located within the city limits. I believe that the department is aware of the potential necessity for moving that center, and I think there are a couple of possible locations that fall within the radius described in the amendment. Fear that some of us have is that without the amendment and given the budget constraints that we have, there might be some temptation to simply do away with this center or merge it with the center in Duluth. But given the nature of the surrounding area, we feel it's very important to keep this office closer to the area that it serves, and so I offer this amendment.
Okay.
I believe the author is disposed to accept the amendment, Madam Chair.
Yes. Representative Murphy.
I heartily endorse this amendment.
Mr. Meyer.
Madam Chair, members, Bob Meyer, DNR. The city of Cloquet does wish to acquire our site for some retail development that's going on there. The problem that we have currently is we've done a detailed assessment of the facilities in the area. Nothing is within the range that does meet our needs for storage. We've looked with the county highway department. There is no space for us there. We've talked to the university. There's no space there. We will need new construction to do this, and the 10-mile radius may provide problems in that. We are committed to staying in the area. We do need a wildlife and a forestry presence. However, putting in this 10-mile radius may slow down and hamper our negotiations with the city of Cloquet.
Are there any further questions? If not, Representative Hilty renews his amendment. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. Representative Hilty, I believe you have another amendment, the H3625A5.
I do, Madam Chair. This amendment addresses a situation that was brought to my attention. There are, I believe, six environmental learning centers scattered across the state. All of them include programs that involve adult or college and university programs, which they house students for brief periods of time. And of course, it's an environmental learning center, so they're spending all of their time in the environment. A question has arisen about whether the rules that the Department of Health has regarding dormitory spaces would apply two environmental learning centers that tend to be constructed in a way that does not provide the same kind of space that you would have in a college dormitory. And this amendment we make clear that those rules would not apply in this circumstance. And I believe the Department of Health has considered this proposal and has agreed that this can go forward.
Are there any questions? And I see that Representative Hansen supports this amendment.
Yes.
All in favor of the H3625A5 amendment, say aye.
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 Opposed? Carried. Representative Hansen?
I'd like to thank the committee for the consideration here. I do want to note that some of the concerns that have been raised by Representative Solberg, I have talked with Mr. Hickey, trying to get the DNR and NFIB and those folks together at the same table. That has not occurred yet. And if you'd want to join those communications, I'd be happy to do that.
Madam Chair, as well, I've been informed that as the original fiscal notes had zero in it, but at one time, this provision had a possible increase of $100,000 and an expenditure of $100,000 within the DNR when the governor first came forward with this. So I'd like to amend the motion. I don't know who made the motion to go to the floor, but to have it come Ways and Means, we'll get a new fiscal note on it, and if it's no fiscal implication, we'll go forward. But the fiscal staff has expressed some concern that we should have an updated fiscal note on it, because there are other additional ones that have been added on.
All in favor of the oral amendment, Representative Sol. Of the amended motion, sorry.
The higher motion.
I would move that the House file, what number is it? 3625, be recommended to pass and re referred to Ways and Means.
As amended.
Members all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carried.
We're on the second Hansen bill. Representative Logenius.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I move the Environment and Natural Resources Finance Division report for House Bill 3550 to the committee in
room. Okay, any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Logenius.
I move Senate File 3576
to the committee and vote to be recommended to pass and place in the Senate. Okay, the motion is before us. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. This is the Senate File version of the viral hemorrhagic septicemia control. We've heard concerns about the VHS before. This is the DNR's response for preventing VHS from getting into Minnesota waters. The Senate has passed the bill, I believe, either unanimously or with one vote against it. And with spring here and fishing season coming, we want to move relatively quickly on this. I do want to note that there were some concerns raised along the way about testing, to make sure that folks could be able to do testing. And in Representative Junkie's policy bill, we did an amendment that has the agencies working together to look at the new lab to try to respond to that. So just wanted to let, as a response to those concerns, in another bill we have something moving. But we would like to move this bill as we could. I don't believe there are any amendments.
Okay, there was one in the packet, but that's not being offered, as I understand it, for benefit of the members. You see it there. The motion is before us. Any discussion on the motion? There is a fiscal note, but it has no cost. Yeah. So,
Okay, so Representative Lagunias renews her motion that House File 3576, the first engrossment be recommended, or excuse me, Senate file, the first engrossment be recommended to pass and placed on the general register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, motion carried. Done for today. Maybe. I don't know what else you may have. But.
Yeah, that's
and we've got one more bill here, I think. It's Representative Dietrich, and I think I saw her in the audience. Yep. And while she's coming forward, Representative Lagunias, are you care to move the report?
I move the Environment and Natural Resources and Finance Division report for House File 3292, first term of the engrossment.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion carried. Representative Lagunias?
I move House File 3292, first committee engrossment, be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Okay, the motion is before us. Representative Dietrich, care to explain the bill?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. House File 3292 addresses the fiscal management of the school trust fund by, first of all, expanding the school trust fund advisory committee, and then it also strengthens the role of the committee to... just a little background on this bill, how this came to be. As many of you know, at the time of statehood, the federal government granted land to Minnesota to be held in trust and to be invested according to the Minnesota state constitution, where it says that we are to maximize the return on the school trust lands in order to benefit the school children of this state. The Department of Natural Resources is the trust beneficiary, and it manages the land that remains in school trust according to the Minnesota state statute. The revenue generated from the land is deposited into the permanent school trust fund, where the State Board of Investment manages the fund, and they are responsible for investing the principal and then taking interest and dividends and distributing it to the school district. The Permanent School Fund Advisory Committee, it currently is comprised of legislators and educators, and that was established by statute to oversee the DNR's management of the land. The legislative auditor's report was issued in regards to school trust lands in 1998, and it had some key recommendations for the DNR's management of this land. A lot of this bill, what came from the legislative audit recommendations by the legislative auditor's report. And so what I would like to do is start to talk about some of those comments and summaries from the legislative auditor's report. So in your packet, there is one of the summaries that looks like this. And I would like to highlight bullets under the recommendations, bullets number 3 and 4. It says that the legislature should require the DNR to report regularly on trust land management. And next, another recommendation was the legislature should consider the constitutional and statutory changes to maximize the fund's revenue growth. And as I mentioned before, I think that this bill does start to do that. And that in addition, in Chapter 5 of the report, which you do not have a copy of, it is titled Oversight and Management of Trust Land. It recommends that the DNR should consider the possibility of assigning specific staff responsibility for coordinating the school trust land activities within the department. And that's taken directly from the report of Chapter 5. And once again, I think that my bill addresses part of that. And then... As another piece to it is, as a former legislator and finance commissioner writes, we think consideration could be given to a broader restructuring of the advisory committee, and it goes on, and there's some pieces of it that I won't read, to bring, but he does summarize here, to bring their special expertise and interest to the committee. And so once again, I think that my bill addresses this. These concerns brought up in 1998 resembled my concerns as I learned more about school trust lands and what our legislative and constitutional obligations were as legislators.
So I hope with that that I have at least given you the framework for that there is a need, and it is just not a need according to me. I think that the Legislative Auditor's Report confirms that there is some need for some change and some redefining of roles, especially legislative roles. So to that, Mr. Chairman, if you wouldn't mind, I would like to just run through the bill.
Okay.
In Section 1, the requires the Commissioner of Finance...
I think they're putting up the...
Okay.
Let's just go to questions, perhaps.
Sure.
They think you did enough with the Legislative Audit Report, I think. They've been here since 12:30, I think, Jim. You're the last bill up, and it's probably what's driving it. Okay, are there any questions on House File 3292? I thought I sent... Representative Edgerton.
Just to be short, I just want to compliment Representative Dietrich for doing this. I know they have meetings throughout the summer on that. And Representative Rocavina has been an advocate for this for a long, long time, so it's not exactly, I think, what Representative Rocavina wants, but it's a step in the right direction.
Representative Graffel. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Dietrich, could you go through the bill for us? No, I'm just kidding. No, Mr. Chairman, Representative Dietrich.
Your appointment from the minority leader sitting next to you might have been pretty short at that point.
I did want to thank Representative Dietrich for her.
Mr. Chairman, I've learned my lesson here. I'm not going through the bill.
I just wanted to thank Representative Dietrich for her work on this issue. And it's an important issue that we need to correct. So thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Representative Graffel is the ranking member. That's what I meant by is replacing Representative Twigum on this committee, who testified before the Conference Committee this morning for this new role. Okay, any further discussion on the bill? Seeing none, then all those in favor
I do have to. One small little thing. On page 2 of the bill, line 2.6, the word principal is... If it wasn't so late, I would use it as a quiz. It is spelled like the principal of a school. It should be in principal as concept. L-E-S.
This is not your pal. In other words, that's the way I always remembered it. The principal is your pal.
Mr. Chairman, that's the teacher coming out of you.
I'll move the amendment.
Mr. Chairman, it's also online on page 3, 3.15.
Okay. Everybody catch that? No, that's an example of where it's... okay, any discussion on the amendment to correct the spelling? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. I suspect, Gene, that this is dealing with education. We should have the correct spelling. So glad you caught it. Okay, Representative Wagenius then renews her motion that House File 3292, the First Committee of Grossman, as amended, be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Any further discussion? Seeing none then, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Next meeting, Friday, April 18th. At 8 a.m. We got another long agenda. That happens to be my birthday, so I hope we get done quickly. No, treats from the egg. With that, meeting is adjourned.